You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
B105.
From the front yard to the backyard, it's time for In and Around the House on B105.
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning? Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony Works on B105. Tony is out today. I think he picked a pretty good day to be out. What do you think, darling?
Yeah, and to go south, too.
Yeah, pretty smart, huh? Well, if you're just waking up with us this morning and you haven't looked outside, yeah, you might take a look. The winter storm Gia that was supposed to be coming across definitely got started today, and we're seeing some snow out there. Roads are slick. So if you don't have to go anywhere, my suggestion is just grab a cup of coffee, sit around and listen, and enjoy the next 3 hours with us. What do you think?
Absolutely.
So, our good friend Darlene Cooper is filling in with us today in Tony's absence. And thank you for coming in and braving the snow. How was your travel in today?
Well, thank you, Bob. I have to give a big shout out to my husband, Joel, who knows I'm a terrible wimp when it comes to snow and dark. So I actually had a great escort down here. So it was fine. Like we were just talking about, it was a little slushy, but other than that, no issues.
What a good husband. He earned some bonus points for that one, didn't he?
Points for that one.
Yeah, you'll owe him something for there. Maybe a good dinner or something tonight. What do you think?
I'll see what I can put together.
There you go. But yes, if you are just waking up, the snow is coming down. The roads are slick. So if you are going to be traveling somewhere, please take your time. Maybe leave a little bit early. And also watch out for all those road crew guys and girls that are out there. They're already hitting the streets. I was coming in from Kenton County, and the roads were slushy, but not bad. But definitely the snow was falling, so please be cautious with that. Nevertheless, we're here, and we've got a great show planned for you today. So, you know, with the snow falling down, we're gonna talk about, you know, is there anything you should worry about? What are the what problems to expect, and really how you should handle that? We're also going to talk about, you know, with salt being put down, is there any sort of damage or anything that you really need to discuss? And then I know we're going to discuss one of Darlene's favorite things, and that's the amaryllis bulbs.
Yahoo!
You know, and let me tell you, if you need information on amaryllis, Darlene is definitely here. And if you have some questions about what's going on with yours, if you've got one at home, she is definitely... Tony has told me that you are the go-to on this.
So he's very generous in
saying
that.
Okay, well, that's nice of you. So, but we've got a great show planned today, and there's also a lot going on. So, you know, like I said, if you are going to have to head out to maybe some youth sports or something, just maybe pack the car.
Take it easy.
Drive a little slower. You know, put some extra water in the car. This is one of those times where it's good to be reminded about having a little safety stuff in the car, you know.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
A candle, a blanket, some extra water, a flashlight. You know, do you keep any of that stuff in your car?
I try to. I travel with my granddaughter quite a bit, so I just always try to anticipate what might happen if I needed to pull over and it was cold and we might be waiting a while. So
yeah,
I think it's a good thing to be prepared.
It is. My mother is the best at this. I mean, she really is. They, you know, all the moms out there I know probably are. And the dads just, they just hop in the car and go.
Exactly.
You know, but if you are.
They're the drivers.
Yeah, or put it in four-wheel drive. And even if you have your four-wheel drive, remember, you can go a little better, but you can't stop. As you know, you still stop the same as a regular
Absolutely.
Car. So, you know, take your time out there. But, you know, we're expecting some pretty good snow today, 1 to 3 inches, according to the Weather Channel, maybe another additional 1 to 3 tonight and into tomorrow. You know, most of the weather guys are all in the same boat. They're all thinking somewhere between 4 and 6 inches.
Exactly. And, you know, the milk, bread and eggs are all gone. So just stay home.
You know, somebody was telling me that there are places where all the good bread is already gone from off the shelf. It's just the healthy bread that's left over. So, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, and my wife did ours. She stocked up a little bit just to make sure the extra stuff is in there. So
every time I look in my pantry, I think we could go through a zombie apocalypse and I'd be stocked. So
We're not that good. But, you know, and then I'll be out doing a little plowing. So I tend to not worry about it as much, and I really should. But I'm out in the snow all the time, so it doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah.
So, but. You know, it's 29 degrees outside, so it's a little cold. So if you happen to go out, you definitely want to bundle up. So what else is going on? What's new with you these days?
Well, nothing. I think I'm like everybody else. I saw a really great post on Facebook the other day that said, I was just about to start dusting and my seed catalogs arrived, so I didn't have to start. So I think we're all in that same place where we're having a little withdrawal from our garden. Luckily, we had a beautiful day last Wednesday, so if you could get out in it, I hope you got to, because it was 60 degrees, a little different than today.
Unbelievable how in Cincinnati...
You can wear flip-flops and boots in the same week.
You can. I mean, I think we had three of our four seasons in 1 week last week.
Yes, yes.
You know, so if you're new to Cincinnati, congratulations. You just experienced Cincinnati weather at its finest. 65, down with snow, back up, you know, it
Absolutely.
Was crazy.
I'm hoping that my hellebores are going to start coming into bloom finally. I think they've been a little mixed up.
They probably are. So they probably are. So now, speaking of all the snow, you know, first thing a lot of people are going to want to go out and do is start maybe grooming off their plants or sweep because they're worried about their plants. And I don't know how you feel, but I feel most of the time we just want to kind of sit tight and let things go.
Absolutely. Snow, what a lot of people forget is that snow is a great insulator.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually can be quite protective to some plants. Ice, on the other hand, is a little bit of a different story, but I don't worry about it at all. I think it looks beautiful, and I think the plants know what to do. So
I agree, and I think it seems like it's a little bit of a wet snow right now, at
yes.
least from what I saw in the car and driving in and even walking into the studio.
Yes.
But still, at this point, I don't think there's a whole lot to worry about.
No.
I think we just want to kind of let most of our plants sit. I'm with you. I love the fact that it's going to help insulate a lot of our perennials
yep.
and protect it from a little bit of colder temperatures, which we're still going to have.
Sure.
You know, and the ground is really warm right now.
Yes.
So by the time the snow sits on there, it's going to be a really good insulated blanket, and it's going to keep the ground fairly warm.
Absolutely.
So I don't think even if we were to get too cold, we would freeze very quickly at all.
No, I don't. I don't know. I've always questioned just when we do get deep ground frost here. It seems like it varies quite a bit, and sometimes I'm not sure it happens.
Yeah.
You can still get a shovel in the ground.
Absolutely. And right now, we just did some landscaping all week with the weather being pretty nice. And we had to be careful for soil compaction and some other issues with things
sure.
being wet. But we wanted to make sure there were some jobs where planting some of your evergreens right now is actually not going to hurt a thing.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, we're cautious. I'm not throwing in some temporary ornamental grasses. And I still don't like to plant dogwood trees and some of my a little bit more ornamentals. In the middle of this type of season, I might wait just a little
right.
bit longer. But, you know, like evergreens, junipers, boxwoods, taxus, all those basic things. I think getting them in the ground is perfectly fine. And this snow is not going to really hurt anything new.
No, I agree with you.
So, but if you do, let's say you have an ornamental that is just one of your favorites and you feel like you have to go broom it off. If you are going to do it, which I would recommend not, and I'm assuming just based on what you said, you're going to say the same thing.
Absolutely.
Just
yeah.
leave it alone.
Yeah.
But if you do, and you're going to broom, sweep with the branches. So, for example, if they're kind of leaning upright, you're going to kind of sweep with them. If you start pushing against them, you're going to cause way more damage than it's worth.
Yes, I agree. I just think... if you worry, first of all, I don't know how you're going to keep up with the snow. If you're going to be
That's
out there sweeping things off,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean... I never start shoveling until I think the end is near. So sweeping's the same way. And I just guess I have a higher tolerance. And I know that the plants are, you know, they're designed to, especially in this zone, to deal with snow.
Absolutely. And even the ones we're pushing pretty far north, like our crepe myrtles right now.
Yes.
And maybe our southern magnolias, they're going to be fine too. So
oh, yes.
really the best advice is don't go do it.
Yeah,
there's no reason to go broom anything off at this point. If you haven't done anything, just that's the best thing you can do is just sit tight.
The best thing you can do is just hot cocoa, Netflix binge with seed catalogs.
There you go. Oh, seed catalogs. Oh, I had to throw that in there too. All right. So what are we going to do on Netflix though? Is there a gardening program you love? Maybe DIY. You know, let's do yard crashers.
Yes.
Or something like that. So.
But tidying yeah, I mean, up.
Absolutely. Right now, we don't want you to worry too much. There's really not a whole lot to worry about with the snow. It's beautiful. You know, we might get 4 inches. Looking at the 10-day forecast, it's going to melt fairly quickly. I mean, it may stick around 3 or 4 days, but it looks like, you know, we might get up into the 30s again, or upper 30s later next week. You know, a couple sunny days, and that stuff's going to melt fast.
I think it's funny because I'm not from Cincinnati, but a lot of times I feel like Cincinnati seems like the South, when indeed it is the Midwest.
It is.
So a lot of snow and a lot of cold is really not out of character for this part of the world.
Well, if you remember last year was really cold.
Yes.
We kind of were mild, not too bad through December. And then I remember it getting really, really cold last year. And we did freeze fairly deep. We couldn't do a whole lot of work through the end of January into February. Once it started warming up, we were fine. But you know, I think a good ground freeze and a little bit of cold is always a good thing anyways. It's a good cycle for the plants.
I agree.
It's good for the trees. We were also getting pretty warm. I got a couple text messages from people where some hyacinth bulbs were already popping up and colorful.
Yep.
You know, and they had some purple color on them. And we're January.
Yeah, that's a little early.
So it was very, very early. So, you know, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about, is there anything you should do to protect maybe that ornamental bulb? So stick with us. Just grab your favorite cup of coffee or your favorite drink, and we'll be right back. Yeah. There we go. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to B105 In and Around the House with Tony Works. Tony is out today, and I am sitting in the high atop the nest of 2060 Digital, and Darlene Cooper is filling in with us today. Good morning, Darlene. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Bob. Nice to be here.
So today, ladies and gentlemen, if you have not looked outside, just don't. It's kind of nasty outside. Just stay inside, relax, enjoy your day, because right now it snow's coming down, starting to cover the roads. Roads are a little bit slick, definitely a little slushy. Our road crews, I have seen them out. They are out working hard. So if you do have to go out, watch out for those guys. You know, they're trying to get a job done, trying to get everything clear so everybody can travel safe. So, you know, if you see them coming, let them pass before you pull out in front of them. But it is a little chilly outside. It's 29 degrees and a steady snow. And I think we're going to have it all day from what it looks like.
It sounds like it. Looks like it.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. So before we went into the break, I had mentioned that somebody sent me a picture about a bulb that is already up, and the hyacinth bulb had already popped and it had some flowers, and I showed you the picture. So what would you, if a customer came to you and said, hey, this is happening, what do you think I should do?
Well, you know, sometimes nature knows what's going on and we don't. Mm-hmm. There isn't much you can do when a bulb decides that it's broken its dormancy and it's time to start growing. And I suspect that warm spot that we had last week probably confused quite a few of them. I think you just have to let nature take its course. There's nothing you can do to prevent it from blooming. As you and I were saying, you could cover it with a plastic pot,
right?
But to me, you just have to kind of let it do its thing.
I think so too. And I think the picture, she has other ones. I know this lady, she has some other bulbs, and these were the only three she sent me. There might be more, but you know, with that 65-degree day, certain parts of the ground where there's more sunlight were definitely warming up.
Sure.
And that bulb was thinking, oh, it's time to go. And that's happened before. Has that ever happened to you in any of your stuff?
I've had stuff come early before. And I also wonder sometimes, too, the timing of the planting, the way the bulb was stored before you bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Was it in a really warm, dry environment? Because that can push them too.
Absolutely.
So, I've had a few surprises, but, typically everything adjusts.
Yeah, I had a bunch of hyacinths that I planted for my wife 1 year. She wanted a bunch. And the following year, we kind of had the same thing we had this year, where it was really warm. And a lot of them started to come up. And I just left them.
Yep.
I didn't do anything to it. I didn't worry about it. I did have them mulched properly when I planted them.
Yeah.
So I think that was key. And the picture that was sent to me, the one thing I noticed is she did not have any mulch. It was just bare dirt.
Yep.
Where I think the mulch would regulate that temperature a little bit more and would have slowed those bulbs down.
Could very well have.
And I know in the fall, Tony and I talked heavily about making sure plants were mulched properly. And this is an exact reason why.
Yes. Yep.
When you have these temperature swings, a lot of things can be affected, and I think those bulbs were.
I would agree.
So, but what could, other than just letting them go, the only thing I suggested was, like you said, she could take maybe a larger pot with the snow coming if she's real worried about it. Or if we're going to get a really cold snap. And they are saying the polar vortex is supposed to come down and eventually get us.
Yep.
It hasn't yet. But, you know, you could still only leave that pot on for a couple days. Or if it's in complete darkness, it'll shut down for a while. But if it stays in there too long, it's just going to kind of.
Well, yeah. And then you also have to think about how much heat's in the ground. And is there enough heat in the ground to make a greenhouse effect? I mean, there's a lot of science
there. Which actually pushes it faster.
Yes, exactly, which would just push it to bloom.
So my suggestion to her was maybe a pot for the snow that's coming. Don't leave it on very long. I did suggest a little light layer of mulch, even around it now, would at least help regulate it and protect the other ones that she had. But, you know, for the most part, I think you're exactly right. Just let things go.
Yeah.
You know, I think this cool down is really good for trees too, because I was worried about some of the early ones, like the weeping
really
cherry.
Really pushing
buds early because we were 65.
Yep.
So I really think, even though we all love 65.
I love 65.
I did too, but 65 in January for a day or two is fine. But if we'd have had a couple weeks worth, we could have had some pretty good problems and pretty good damage on plants that were pushing early with new buds, and then this cold weather.
Well, you know, Bob, you reminded me of, I think it was back in 2007 or 2008, I can still remember that because we were taking my daughter on a trip, and it was 82 degrees, I believe it was the 1st of April, and the next day it was 17.
You know, I think, did we get some snow sometime in there during that time? Do you remember?
I was gone, so okay. I don't remember. But
it's funny you said that. We were doing a landscape job out by our garden center, and the Japanese maples were in leaf.
Yes.
The roses
were
already in bud. All the perennials, like the salvia, were already blooming.
Yep.
I mean, there was a lot of things, and we planted, and we're working, and it was a two-day job. First day was just like that. It was pretty good. We're out kind of in just a light sweatshirt, almost T-shirt. And then a snowstorm hit.
Oh, boy.
And it got cold for days.
Yes.
And we had 5 inches of snow.
Yep.
And it was, I remember standing in the guy's backyard and watching. It was like, I'm like, what is coming?
Yes.
And here comes like a blizzard.
Yeah.
And the homeowner said, are we going to have issues? I said, well, you're not, because everything's warrantied.
Yes.
I probably am going to
have
a lot of
issues
depending on how cold this is. And we did have some issues. The Japanese maple lived but took a beating, so I replaced it. But, you know, it's still the best thing we can do is just leave it.
Well, I remember my son saying, because I collect Japanese maples, and he said, Mom, the maples are all leafed out. What do you want me to do? And I said, get the sheets out.
Yep.
And he said, I don't think we have enough sheets.
protect the best ones. You know, and I've said several times on the show, and Tony always jokes with me about me leaving my Christmas lights up too long. And I have some that are stuck in my blue spruce that I haven't been able to get out. But I always save a couple strands of blue spruce because I also have a lace leaf maple that I love that I planted at our very first house. Moved from the first house to the second house,
boy.
And I still have now. So it has sentimental value.
Yep.
And most of the time, I don't worry about it. But if all of a sudden I'll put a sheet on it. And somebody taught me years ago to put some mini Christmas lights in there first.
Oh, wow.
Plug those in and then throw the sheet on top.
Make a little warmth.
It creates a little bit of warmth. If it's just a day or two, I didn't worry about it.
Right.
But if it looked like we were going to have 5 or 6 days,
I
would try to help it along. And I've done that a couple times, and it really has helped.
Yes.
Days like this, I didn't worry about it.
Oh, no.
There's nothing to worry about. Most of the time, most Japanese maples, I'm still seeing last year's leaves still sitting on them.
Oh, yeah. I've got quite a few.
So the snow hopefully will knock some of that off. So, but while we're out there, there's going to be a lot of salt coming. A lot of people are going to throw rock salt down on their driveways. And I'm always real cautious about putting those specifically around planting beds.
Yes.
Because I know rock salt is the cheapest, but it can run and then also get into the soils.
Yes.
And can cause some problems to some of our tender roots, especially some of our tender ones, but even to other things
yes.
if there's too much on there. So
well, especially the herbaceous perennials. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very shallow rooted, so it doesn't take a lot to damage them. So I think you just have to be mindful about where, how, and how much you're using too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the key. So if you are, when you shovel your driveway and you're going to be putting some salt down, you know, we want to be cautious on that. So, you know, we want to use the right amount.
Yep.
We want to use only the amount that we need. And then there are some other products out there that may be a little bit better. And by no means am I a salt expert. But when we come back from the break, we are going to talk about a couple of the different types that you can use, how you can protect your plants a little bit from salt damage, and if there's anything else that you need to be thinking about when it comes to this weather and the salt. So stick with us. This is In and Around the House on B105, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to B105 and In and Around the House. Tony is off today. He is on secret assignment, so secret that they wouldn't even tell me where he went. So so if you ask me, I won't know. But he picked a really good day to be off. What do you think?
I agree. I think he called in a major favor by asking us.
I think so. He put you on the spot. He figured he'd bring you in on the snowiest day of the year, or of the whole season so far. But our good friend Darlene Cooper is filling in with us today, and what a wealth of knowledge. And she really understands plants, and she's kind of a plant nerd like me. So this is going to be fun. You know, and I know I haven't got to know Darlene very well, just so the listeners know how it is. But what we've talked about, she is a wealth of knowledge, and I cannot wait to learn from her today. And I think you guys will, too. But when we went to the break, we were talking about some salt, because obviously salt is going to be put down.
Yes.
Road crews have to put it down to get the roads clear. Homeowners are going to be doing some. And I think sometimes homeowners get a little carried away and they're like, oh, I got a 50-pound bag of salt. Let's throw it all down. And you really don't need that much.
No.
So when it comes to salt, usually sometimes less is more. Let the products work the way they're supposed to. They're supposed to melt, and as they're moving, they're kind of running through areas, they're actually helping to get rid of some of the ice and some of the snow. But today, with the snow that's out there so far, it is a little bit heavy, a little bit slushy, so you're probably going to have to shovel the driveway a little bit. But if you are going to go look for some rock salt, and once again, I'm going to put a disclaimer out there. I am by no means an expert on this, but I do know that rock salt is going to be somewhat toxic to your plants.
It can be very damaging.
And it's also harder on your concrete, but it does work really well. So if you use it properly, it's probably fine. But if you use in excess, you could have some issues and damage your plants, especially if you're really close to vegetation or runoff goes into vegetation.
Yes.
So the other thing you need to think about is this is one of those snowfalls that's going to go for all day and maybe into tomorrow. So you may shovel, throw some salt down, and then go have to shovel again.
Yes.
So when you're shoveling, make sure when you shovel the snow, you're not piling it up on your plants, or try to keep it out of your planting beds, especially. Sometimes you have to throw it into the grass and you may burn a little grass. That can be fixed. But fixing lawn is much cheaper than fixing plants.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to it, the rock salt is going to be your cheapest. That's your sodium chloride. It's the stuff in the yellow bag for the most part. There are some other products out there, so you want to check your labels. Calcium chloride is another one that will work really well and generates heat to freeze up the ice and the snow. It is a little more expensive. A little less corrosive on your concrete and a little bit nicer on your plants and the environment, but still maybe not the best option, but it's better than rock salt. Another one out there is called magnesium chloride. This one will work really well into much colder temperatures. It can be used around vegetation. So if you have a lot of plants that you want to protect, you might look for something with a magnesium chloride in it. Also, another one that's out there, and we're not going to go through everything, but calcium magnesium acetate. This one works really well for plants and if you have animals. So if you got dogs that are going to be walking on areas that you want to protect, this one you might look at. I still recommend wipe the little doggy paws off or clean them up when they come in so that stuff doesn't sit on their paws. But this one, it's not going to dissolve the snow or ice as much. It's going to leave you slush, so you will have to shovel, which is why I mentioned going back to when you shovel, don't throw it on your plants.
Yes.
So very important. And then if you really want one of the most safest ones out there, a potassium chloride product is out there. And I'm going through it pretty quick because, if you use the rock salts, fine. Just be cautious and just don't use too much.
Right.
But there are other products out there, so just make sure you read your labels. If you don't know what you're looking at, the guys who are selling it, most of those, if you're hitting some of the hardware stores, a lot of those guys should be able to tell you exactly what's going on. But just be cautious. Because when it comes to rock salt on plants, what I've found is a lot of problems is that second time when you shovel the snow the second time and you just throw it, or you take your snow blower and you shoot it into your beds, you're just putting all those chemicals right on your plants.
Yes.
So we know salt drifts as well. You know, it drives. You've been driving down the road and you see the salt blowing behind cars and trucks.
Yeah.
That actually can cause some damage on plants as well. And some things that I have found, if you have some temperamental things that you really love and you want to protect, is you can take some burlap sacks or burlap and actually create like a barrier around those specific plants.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to do anything besides sheets?
No. Although I have, when I've had people that were concerned about plants and particularly being exposed to especially windy types of scenarios, we have recommended, if you're, you know, using burlap as a protective barrier to keep wind and other debris off of the plant in the winter. So
yeah, and sometimes we have to worry more about the winter winds than even the snow
or
the cold.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have something that is temperamental, you know, you can use the burlap as a wind barrier. Also, snow fencing.
Yes.
You remember the old-fashioned snow fencing with the slats and, like, the chicken wire type? That works really well.
Yeah, you have to be careful with the burlap, though, too, because if you're using it in a really snowy situation, the weight of the snow on the burlap can be as damaging to the plant as if you didn't put anything on it.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly right. It's the same thing with when you throw sheets to protect things. That's why we recommend earlier, really don't do anything at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think...
Remain calm.
What'd you say, Netflix and seed... Seed.
Yes, hot chocolate and seed catalogs.
There you go, hot chocolate and seed catalogs. But, you know, just with the weather, we really don't want you to have any concerns. There's not a whole lot to worry about, but we bring up some of these topics just so you have the information. So, but when we get, we're going to take a quick pause right now, but when we come back, we are going to get into the amaryllis bulb. And this one kind of fascinates me because you can really get some beautiful color this time of year. And I've got some questions for Darlene, so stick with us. Grab your favorite cup of coffee or whatever drink you have, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to B105 In and Around the House with Tony Works. Tony is out today and picked a good day to do it. If you're just waking up with us this morning, good morning. And if you haven't looked outside, you can go ahead and do it. But you may not like what you see. The snow is coming down. The winter storm Gia that was predicted for quite a while. This was one they predicted well in advance. It's here. I think it started hitting the studio area around 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, so it started a little earlier. But snow is falling. Roads are slick. Road crews are really been out early that I've seen and doing a great job. But just if you got to go somewhere today, please be cautious. So when we're going into the break, we were talking about kind of an old-fashioned flower, and some may not know what it is. Many do. I know the Crone Conservatory has some beautiful ones right now,
I think,
that are out there. But the amaryllis bulb, you don't hear as much about it, but it is a beautiful plant.
No, you don't. And when I first was introduced to amaryllis, I was completely ignorant on the subject, and I didn't see what the fascination was. And because I was curious, I decided to start growing them. And now it's become a little bit of an obsession / habit, but I really enjoy sharing it with my granddaughter. We start our amaryllis. I think there's a target date you want to hit, and if you want a bloom at Christmas time, the thing I enjoy the most about them is that they're a really beautiful bright spot of color when. At a time of the year when it tends to be very gloomy and overcast and everything's sleeping in the garden. So I really enjoy that spot of color.
Absolutely, because they're gray. I mean, it's gray outside. You have some evergreens, but it's really, there's nothing blooming,
right.
I mean, you get your poinsettias, which everybody knows about poinsettias. But the amaryllis bulb is very fascinating to me, and I haven't had that much experience with it. So when I knew you had a lot more than I did, I was really interested to really get to some questions and talk about things.
Okay.
But what I found was kind of, if you want that bloom time at Christmas, you really need to plant, you had to plant this thing sometime between really the very end of October and the beginning of November.
Correct, yes.
And temperature is very important when it comes to amaryllis bulbs.
It is. But what I find, the thing that's really cool about amaryllis and all bulbs, in my opinion, is that they have all the information and all the attributes they need in one little bulb. Everything they need to make a perfect plant is contained there. So, and two of the amaryllis I'm currently growing, I oversummered. So I had those out on my patio all summer. And then when it started to get cool, I cut all the foliage, I cut all the roots, I brought them in, I stuck them in the garage for a few weeks, and then brought them back in the house.
So yours is starting to bloom now, correct?
Mine are budded right now.
Yours are budded right
now.
How long once that bloom pops, how long will you have?
Oh my gosh, they really bloom a long time. What I find is they typically send up at least two main stalks with bloom sets on them. And they last forever. There are really some interesting colors out there now. I was sharing with you one of the ones that I think they actually grew this at Crone Conservatory. I think Warder grew it for Crone Conservatory. But even the standard red and white and pink are really pretty.
And those are the standard colors.
Those are the standards. I'm growing one that's a tangerine color.
Oh, I bet that's beautiful.
And it's really, really, that's the one that's getting ready to pop right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fun part is, you know, you have this big, ugly, lump and it's a big bulb and all I do is I put some rocks in a vase and a little water and I set that bulb. Actually, one of mine is sitting on the rocks right now. But usually they'll sit just above there and then the roots will start to come down to get the water source. And they go from being just this big brown ugly lump to a fabulous long green stalk, lots of foliage, and huge flowers.
So if somebody does have a bulb and they've planted it and it's only got green stalks, does that mean at this point it's probably not going to bloom or should they just sit tight? What do you think?
I've got one that's still, of my three, I have one that's limping along behind the others and it's hard to know if it's going to be able to produce enough, if we're going to have enough light to produce the energy it needs to make another flower. But all bulbs produce foliage, nearly all bulbs produce foliage first.
Right, first.
And that foliage is where they get the energy to produce the flower. So I would say be patient. If you can give it a little bit more light, what's really funny is I sometimes move mine around. And if I get mine too far from where the light is, they start bending.
Oh, stretch to the light.
Oh, they absolutely stretch toward the light. And it's really funny. And then you have to turn them around and watch them right themselves again. But so I think I'll have blooms in the next couple of days. Again, I started late. But
right. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the amaryllis bulb. And this is something that is for the inside this time of year to really enhance the house, give you some beautiful color when it's just not pretty outside. But when you were talking about light, what kind of sun exposure? I mean, are we putting these right by the window? Or are we just getting them indirect? How much light do we really need on these?
Well, unfortunately, my kitchen area is where I always grow them, and I grow them near a big window in my kitchen, and it's south-facing.
Okay, so it gets sun.
It gets a lot of sun, and I think that the more sun, the better for them, especially if you're going to get good flower production.
Now, with a lot of indoor stuff, you know, we always worry about, like with our cut Christmas trees and our poinsettias, we're trying to keep them away from the vents where the heat blows directly to them.
Yes.
We doing the same thing with the amaryllis bulb?
Well, yeah, mine are up on my countertop, so I don't have to worry about that too much. But yeah, the vents tend to dry things out. So I would certainly avoid doing that. I also love that you don't have to fertilize. You don't really have to do anything to them other than when they're finished, get them prepped and get them in a dark spot and ready for
next
year.
So they're pretty low maintenance.
Yes.
Because I really personally have never fooled with them, but I am fascinated by them. So does each stalk, leaf, blade, whatever it's called, does that produce one flower, or will there be multiple flower on bulbs?
There'll be multiple flowers. They're almost in a circular pattern. There'll be four or five big blooms on each stalk. So pretty showy.
So if homeowners are out or people are out going to look for a bulb, probably next year at this point.
Yep.
But if they want to look, does bigger bulb mean better?
Well, I think the main thing to look for whenever you're shopping for bulbs is firmness.
Mm-hmm.
So many the way they're stored and the way they're handled before they come to you is really important. It's something you can't control. But when you go to select the bulbs, and amaryllis typically come in along with paper whites, they'll come in very late at the same time as your spring blooming plants like tulips and daffodils,
right,
and those sorts of things. So, but I think people typically see amaryllis as more of a Christmas,
absolutely,
like a Christmas cactus, kind, yeah, of a Christmas sort of a plant. But when you're selecting, you just really want to be able to get a nice firm bulb, no squishiness to it at all.
So it's like you're going to the grocery store and you're searching for that perfect fruit, and all of a sudden you squeeze,
yes,
one, and
then,
you, yeah, know, it's like rotted on the inside.
Yes.
It's the same thing. If you're feeling that,
correct,
on the bulb, push that one aside. Let's get another one.
Correct.
But does the size of the bulb affect of how many flowers it's going to have?
I don't know that I've seen that,
okay,
although I think it's probably a good indicator of plant health.
Yeah,
have a nice big bulb.
Well, I just always, you know, they always say bigger is better. So I just wondered if when it came to amaryllis bulbs, if that was actually true or not. So let's say some of those, there are some people that may have bought some and they were planted maybe even as early as the 15th of October. You know, their bloom time goes so long, and they might be coming to the stretch here soon.
Yes.
What is the procedure as these things shut down? What should people do with their amaryllis bulb so that way they may be able to winter them over and bring them back next year?
Well, what I was always taught about all bulbs is that as long as you have green foliage, let that be, because that's the way the plant's making energy for the next time. So,
okay,
the main thing to do is once everything's shot, the foliage doesn't look good anymore, cut it all off, cut the roots off, and then store them in a cold, dark place, whether it's the garage. I mean, the garage is probably a little cold for some, but the basement's probably a great spot.
Yeah, the basement, so it's kind of a steady temperature, maybe?
Correct.
Cooler,
and
dark. Okay, do they need to wrap it in any paper? You know, some have seen people wrap things in tissue paper. Do they put them in a baggie, or do they just kind of let them sit in a dark spot, maybe in
a box? Think if you put them in any kind of a bag, make sure there's ventilation.
That's key. Okay, that's what I want to make sure, because
yes,
I didn't know that, and you know, if you throw it in,
really get fungal issues.
Yeah, exactly. And then you make it into where you pull it out in the spring next year, and it's mushy.
Yeah.
And then you're done with it. So, but yes, if you haven't tried an amaryllis bulb and you want something to try that's maybe different this time of year.
Fun project for kids.
It is fun. And I'm sure your granddaughter loves it, doesn't she?
Well, yeah, she's fascinated.
To watch it grow. And so she comes over and wants to see, has it progressed? So, well, I can't wait to see some pictures, especially the tangerine one. You'll have
all
to,
right,
definitely put that one on Facebook so I can see that. So.
Excellent.
But, yeah, amaryllis is something you guys could definitely look at. So, so we're about ready to take a break here. And when we get back, we are going to talk about, is there any sort of maintenance? We're going to kind of switch gears. Is there any maintenance that you guys should be doing in your lawn now? I know we've got the snow out there, but is there anything you should be doing? Well, stick with us. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. Tony is off today. I am sitting atop 2060 Digital with Darlene Cooper, who's filling in with us this morning. And thank you, Darlene, again for coming in and braving the snow.
Thanks for having me, and thanks, Joel, for braving the snow.
Yeah, your husband. Her husband brought her, if you weren't listening earlier today, her husband got up early and drove her in today. How nice. What,
yeah,
a guy. I think that's good.
It was very kind and
you'll have
deeply
to remember
appreciated.
That when he screws up next time. If he does something wrong, he'll remember. At least, hey, he helped you this time, so he's earned
thank
an extra
that
brownie point. I know. I do that with my wife. Anytime I can earn an extra brownie point, I try. So, but coming out of the break, we were talking about, you know, maintenance, and is there anything that you should do? And up until this snowfall, Tony and I, last few weeks, there's been a few things that have been, we joked, we called it what's bugging Bob. But through the month of December and kind of into January, you know, I've been to a lot of places where I'm seeing just people, they just plant their plants and they're just letting things go. They're not trimming at all. You know,
right,
they're just putting them in the ground. And I'm sure over the years you've heard this, well, I want it to grow to a height and then I'm going to start pruning.
Right.
You know, which I don't know how you feel, but that to me is just a big no-no. You know, I'm always pruning as I go.
Well, I think almost all plants require some type of regular pruning to keep their shape, to keep their density. Sometimes it's to keep the air circulation going. Sometimes you need to thin plants out because they're not growing properly because they're not getting enough light down deep.
Absolutely. I think that's a big key. So, like, And what Darlene's talking about there is when you know maybe look at some of your evergreens, especially, and maybe even some of, you know, I see this on Sistina plums where the tops are all full,
yes,
you know, and then the bottoms are bare as can be.
Yes.
Know? So when you look at a plant and you see the top has beautiful foliage and the bottom is just sticks, a lot of times that happens from a plant just because it grows that way. But a lot of times it's because people didn't prune properly.
Correct.
Now, you're a butcher, right? You like to trim.
I like to prune a lot.
Now, when you say that, if I look at you, let's take Japanese maples.
Love to prune Japanese maples.
When are you going to do that?
I think this is a subject of great debate, but because I have been in the green industry for such a long time, I do it when I can do it, and almost always that's between Memorial Day and July 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And why I do that, I like to let all the foliage emerge. I like to see what the overall shape of the plant is, and then I like to come in and selectively remove pieces that aren't bringing anything to the picture. I also think that it helps create a little bit denser canopy, but I typically thin my Japanese maples out more than anything else.
Well, and I think that's a good thing because I agree with you, because what I love about most of the Japanese maples is the fact that usually their bark has some interest,
yes,
or their branching has some interest,
yes,
to it. You know, so if and when I'm going to go ahead and prune those, you know, I might take some branches that are crossing. You know, I,
yes,
want to clean those up right away because we know that could make a soft spot. Moisture can get in it and cause,
yes,
damage 10 years down
and
the road.
And they're very prone to that, to crossing branches.
And that happens because they go everywhere. So I'm with you. I love to prune. Now, I might go even a little longer. Sometimes in the fall, I'll go through and clean things up because,
oh yeah,
I've found that, at least the ones at my house, it gets so warm sometimes. That second round of growth sometimes is quite,
yes,
big. There's a lot to it,
yes,
and I need to get in there and prune. Now, in Japanese maples, I think I'm a selective pruner, and I think that's what you said. I like to use hand pruners.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not using the big shears on Japanese maples. I want to clean these ends up with a good set of hand pruners or maybe a small set of loppers.
Yeah, I don't use anything electric. I just use hand pruners. I think you get I know how hard it is to hand prune taxus. Believe me, I do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are in the habit of using electric trimmers on plants like taxus or really anything, it makes a very uneven, very jagged cut on the plant, and it results over time in a condition called bird's nesting, where you have just a little canopy of green up on top, and then you have nothing but wood in the middle.
Right.
So it's kind of set yourself up for failure in that,
yeah,
case.
I think you'll see that on some boxwoods as well.
Yes.
And a lot of times I like to use the hand shears and the hand pruners.
Yes.
One, they're easy to sharpen even for homeowners by themselves if they wanted to. They're actually,
yes,
pretty easy to clean up. Also, if you have an issue, a lot of times with the gas trimmers, you're just worried about trimming and getting done.
Yeah.
Where with the selective pruning and you're doing it more by hand, you're paying attention to what's on the plant. So if you,
yeah,
see there's an issue, you can sterilize your pruners a lot faster,
yes,
and clean up things,
yeah,
so you don't spread diseases.
It's all about control. You,
mm-hmm,
have so much more control when you use hand pruners.
But this time of year, obviously with the snow, we're not going to be doing much. But when we get into we start thawing out, you know, there's still, I notice there's a lot of people who have their perennials that are still just dead and dormant and laying there.
Yes.
I'm going to go ahead and tell them when they get the opportunity to go ahead and start cleaning some of those things up.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, especially when you have a wet season like we've just had. I know there's a lot to be said for leaving seed heads like on black-eyed Susans and coneflowers for the birds to enjoy.
Sure.
But there comes a point when the cleanliness aspect is more important, and you want to avoid fungal disorders and you want to avoid any kind of disease issues that you might get by leaving the foliage on.
Well, and by removing some of these foliages, when we do start officially warming up,
yeah,
it's going to make it easier for some of these plants to,
yes,
really come through.
Break dormancy. Yeah.
And break the dormancy and be healthier,
yes,
in the long run. And I really notice that in a lot of ornamental grasses, because I've been around a lot of area lately, and ornamental grasses, with the big winds we had, there was a lot of tumbleweed issues,
oh,
going,
boy,
on.
Yeah.
And some of the grasses were getting messy.
Yes.
You know, and I know there's a little debate on this. Some people say, well, no, let's wait until spring before we trim.
Yep.
Oh, no, I want to trim it in the fall. I don't think there's a right or wrong. I don't know if you've had experience with that, but I don't think it matters.
I don't think so.
It's in the eye of the beholder there.
Yes.
But I still like to get my grasses cleaned up because I just don't want the mess,
yes,
everywhere else.
Yeah.
I was in a meeting a client the other day, and the neighbor had some Miscanthus sinensis, maiden grasses there, and there was about six, and they were big.
Yep.
Her whole yard from his grasses were covered with ornamental grass, dead blades laying all over.
Yep.
And it was a mess.
Yep.
And that homeowner wasn't going to go help the neighbor.
No.
So it was up to her to clean everything. And it was bad. I took some pictures, and I should have put them on the Facebook page. But I think if it warms up and the ground's not too wet to where you're compacting the soil, you know, if we do start to dry out a little bit, then go ahead and start cleaning things up. If it's covered in snow, we're going to leave them all alone. We're not telling you to do this now. This is coming up in the future. But there are some things that you're definitely going to have to do, and I think ornamental grasses is one of them.
Absolutely.
Yep. So let's change gears for a second. What about roses? How do you like to mess with your roses?
Roses, I leave alone. My great horticulture teacher, Mr. Tom Smith, formerly of Spring Grove Cemetery, told me you should never prune roses before the 15th of April, or tax day, as he liked to call it. Mm-hmm. We like to see when they break their dormancy. If you cut them back too soon and they start to flush and put new growth on, and then we get severe weather, then you're back to square one.
And that's happened this last past year. We were pretty warm, and then April got cold.
Yes.
And there were definitely some issues.
It's better to let nature dictate when you're going to do that.
I think the only exception might be the knockout roses or something along those lines, because everybody wants you to trim those.
Yes.
And I think all of us are kind of over knockouts. I mean, we've just kind of gotten to the point to where there's some other things out there that are really pretty.
Yes.
That'll give you just as easy a maintenance and give you a lot of color. So,
agree.
Now, one thing that I definitely want people to start considering, not doing it now, but this is coming up here probably in 3 to 4 weeks. I like to put some weed prevention down in my beds when it starts to, when it warms up a little bit, because I want to try to prevent these early winter weeds.
Yes.
And some are already showing in my house. I was shocked how many weeds are already starting to pop that warm weather.
Yeah.
So when the snow stops and it warms up just a little bit and you get a nice day, maybe consider putting some, you know, I know people love preen. That's what most people know. We love to use High Yield, which is the Fertilome product.
That's my favorite.
And its dimensions. And it is a much better product. It lasts longer.
Yep.
And I think it does a better job overall.
I would agree.
You're not paying for that name, and you're not paying for that bottle. So you're getting a good product.
Yes.
So what about any sort of evergreens? Is there anything that you would want to do right now as far as cleaning up or in the next couple weeks? Are you going to kind of sit tight?
I'm not going to do too much on mine. Most of my evergreens are, the bulk of what I have are ornamental, so I don't have to do much with them.
So you're in pretty good shape.
Yes.
So pretty good shape. Well, all right, we got to take another break right now. So, but when we come back, last week Tony and I touched on some pathways towards the end of the show, and we really didn't get into it. So we are going to get into different types of pathways and maybe some advantages you can do and some of things that you can entice your landscaping and enhance the landscaping just with some simple pathway ideas. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to B105 In and Around the House. It is a beautiful day outside, isn't it?
Lovely.
Yes. If you love snow and you are one of those people who have been waiting for the white death, as I call it, or the S word around here, which we don't like to mention, snow, you're very happy this morning. So if you're just waking up and you haven't looked outside, the winter storm is here. We are under a winter storm warning until Sunday morning. So please be cautious if you're going to be out driving. Give yourself some extra time, some extra room to stop. Roads are looking outside. They're still pretty covered out there looking out the window from the studio here. On my way in, the 75 cutting the hill was fine. At 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 this morning, coming through Cincinnati was fine, but I know the snow has been falling all day. And Darlene, you came in from the north side, and you said it wasn't bad.
Wasn't too bad, nope.
So, but we know it's going to get worse all day, so if you don't have to go out, stay in, be safe. You're going to enjoy the show. We've got a couple hours left of this show. If you've got something you want to add to the show, if you have some questions for us, you can give us a call at 749-B105. You can also send us a message on Facebook. You know, so if you've dealt with some of the amaryllis that we've talked about, or, you know, you want to add something or ask some questions, feel free to call at any time. So But when we came, we went into the break, we were talking about some pathways. And there are a bunch of different type of pathways. And, you know, who doesn't like to walk down a pathway through the woods or even something like that? I mean, even if you take your granddaughter for a walk, you know, it's kind of nice just to kind of have a pathway sometimes.
Yes.
And sometimes they're for decoration. Sometimes they're functional. You know, they're depending on your landscape and your application, there's a bunch of different types you can choose. So one of the easiest, if you're trying to create something through the woods, and I don't know if you have any sort of stepping stones or anything through your gardens, but one some customers use if they want something economical, it's just different type of mulches.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some customers use some cypress mulch, and they were using the B grade. So if you remember, the Allbark cypress is that real shredded, light brown, real light and fluffy. What we're calling landscape grade, it's going to be a little bit chunkier, lays out, makes a nice pathway if you have a muddy area and you just want to kind of get around the side of the house and you want something real natural looking. A pathway out of mulch can definitely work. And there's other mulches you can use, like nuggets.
Yes.
Ornament the nuggets, I like the nuggets as a mulch in general just because I think it's healthy for plants.
I like all the pine barks.
I'm
a big fan. And pine straw has become extremely popular as well.
Absolutely. So, you know, and what's nice is maybe you take your pine straw as your mulch, and then maybe you take a pine fine mulch where you kind of put it with the pine straw.
Yes.
And it contrasts, and then you create a pathway through a garden with mulches on both sides, and you get a little bit of a contrast. But sometimes a pathway needs to be very functional.
Yes.
And this time of year, you mentioned already how wet things are.
Yes.
So through sometimes through your landscapes, you know, if you're paying attention, you might have a real wet area. And it's really hard to plant in wet areas, isn't it?
It is.
So what we may do is we may actually take some different aggregates or gravels. And if you talk to Margie at Bushelman Supply, this is her expertise.
She's the best.
When it comes to gravels and aggregates and stone, Margie is outstanding. But sometimes it's so wet, you need to dry things out. But it's areas where you need to walk or take your wheelbarrow through or just to get to the backside of the garden. And sometimes your aggregates or your gravels will work really well. Now, some gravels might be harder to push on, like pea gravel.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're familiar with using any pea gravel, it's real small, so as you're walking on it, it moves a lot. Really hard to push a wheelbarrow through. So if you do need to do a gravel, because you're also creating a moisture and a drain, you can dig your drain out and run the water wherever it needs to go to kind of dry the land out.
Yes.
So if you have a slope, you can run it in one direction, and then you can use a gravel so the water will run through and stay basically on the ground surface, and then you have the gravel on top that you can walk through. So if you were creating a garden, would you use just stepping stones to create a pathway? Do you have a preference?
Well, I'll tell you, of all the smaller stones that I've used, one that I really like is the Merrimack.
Oh, you're going, okay.
I think that's a really, really pretty, it's a very natural looking stone.
Kind of an orangey brown.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And so I think it works really well. It makes a bit of a contrast, but not a glaring one. But I do enjoy, I have a lot of areas because I have dogs. I have a lot of areas where I lose my turf.
Sure.
And so I think those are the prime candidates for stone and gravel walkways.
Absolutely. And Merrimack is one that she mentions. And this is another good example. It comes in different sizes.
Yes.
So if you have a really small, almost pea gravel size, that's fine if you're just going to kind of maybe have some light foot traffic.
Yes.
You know, because it's going to move a little bit, but it's very pretty. If it's an area where you need to wheel a wheelbarrow through or you're taking a mower through, you might have to go with a larger size because it does start to, the bigger pieces will kind of pack in a little bit better and not move as much. And this is where sometimes on your pathways, your gravels, you got to be careful what you choose. And you got to know what you're trying to accomplish. It's kind of the same thing with plants.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
If you're in a shady area, you got to know what plants are going
to
work.
To plan accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So my favorite to use in any garden, you know, especially walking around your Japanese maples that you love or you're going through shade perennials, you know, a lot of those will be in the woodsy areas. I love to take the large flagstones.
Oh, yes.
You know, the big pieces. Now, the disadvantage of these is they're going to weigh a lot.
Yes.
So they're going to be very heavy. But pieces that are maybe 2 feet by 2 feet or even larger. And these you're going to kind of sink into the ground a little bit. So you'll kind of set the stone where it goes. You'll take a spade or shovel and you'll kind of mark around the outside edge, almost outlining it. Kind of you have to move the stone and then you remove some of that soil so you can kind of recess these stones in. And these are great, I think, for natural areas because as they age, they look like they've been there a long time.
Yes.
And I think they can really add some interest to the garden.
I agree.
So, and if you're looking for some different types of pathways, you know, Margie, once again, at Bushelman, will love to talk to you because she has so many options for you. And she really helped Tony in his backyard. I don't know if you've seen any of his pictures.
No.
But he put a stone staircase through there, and they were really large pieces.
Yep.
And it just turned out wonderful. But one thing I do want to mention, because we were talking about salting early in the show, and I don't know if you knew this because I didn't know this till just recently, but rock salt can actually damage your stepping stones and your real stone.
I've heard it. I haven't seen it, but I have heard it.
Yes. Yeah, so if you're out there and you have a stone pathway and you need to throw your salt down, you might want to be a little bit cautious. Just at this point, take a broom, sweep it off, or just shovel it off and then leave it alone. So, and then finally, some of the other type of walkways, which are probably the most common, is concrete.
Yep.
You know, you want to create something to the front door. Concrete, stamped concrete is, if you want to be a lot more decorative, beautiful surface. You can put different designs to it. You can put different colors to it. It's very interesting. And finally, when you're talking about different type of pathways, you remember, you don't have to always be curvy. You don't always have to be straight. It just depends on what fits the landscape and what you want. Sometimes a straight line and a 90-degree turn actually works really, really well. So just got to remember, when you're creating pathways, just have a little fun with it. It is all in the eye of the beholder. So, but we do have to take a quick break. And when we get back, I know Darlene's excited about this one. Last week, Tony and I talked about some shade plants, so we're going to expand on that, and we're going to go to plants Tony and I didn't talk about, and we're going to talk about the hosta and all the different types. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. Tony is off today, and our good friend Darlene Cooper has been filling in, and we have just been flying through this day already, and we're going to get into what both of us really love, and we're kind of nerds. And I did not know until you told me when we spoke on the phone earlier this week. You're a hosta nerd, aren't you?
I'm a hostaholic.
Hostaholic.
I have a terrible addiction, and I found out that as long as you're buying, you're not in recovery.
There you go. I like that. So you love hostas as well, and I love. It doesn't matter what type, big, small, little.
I do, and I tell you, I do sympathize because I speak with a lot of customers that also love hosta, but because of the deer population, mm-hmm. can't grow them. Mm-hmm. And so I try to be sympathetic to that. I just think that they bring such a fascinating element of design, structure, color. I mean, they just bring texture. There's so many different aspects of design that hosta bring to the garden. And but, you know, let's, being honest, they're like pizza to a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a salad bar for the deer.
Yes.
So if you have deer, and you can do deer preventions.
Yes.
But I'll be honest with you, they work for a little while.
Yep.
But eventually, you know, if you're not on it constantly, the deer are going to find that time when they got just a day.
Yes.
And they're going to eat
needed.
Some of those.
Yeah.
But if you are one of those who are lucky enough, and I don't have a deer issue. I live fairly close to the woods. My neighbor has a fence, so there's really not an easy spot for the deer to come through. I'm not on a pathway, so I can get away with some of the different hostas.
Yeah.
So, but what I find interesting about the hostas is how many of them need full shade, how many of them can do both,
yes,
how many can really take a few
a
extra hours
of
sun.
Yeah.
And the other thing about hostas is I don't know how many varieties there actually are. I don't know if anybody has that information.
At least 3,000.
At least. And there are always new ones coming out.
Yes.
And somehow yet all the foliages or the flowers are still somewhat different. That's what I find amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
So what is one of your, you know, what is one of your go-tos? If a customer comes in, what are you going to say? And they say, I want a hosta. What is one of the first ones you might
steer
them to?
Well, if people tell me they want a hosta that has some size to it and some vigor to it and is just a no-fail plant. I would have to put guacamole up
there at the top. I love guacamole.
I
like to eat it too. But I love the perennial guacamole.
I do
guacamole.
Too. It's a very, very constant, consistent performer.
Mm-hmm.
I really like a lot of the larger hosta. I love some of the sub and substance sports that have come out.
And when you say large, some of our listeners may not know what that means. What size are we talking about?
I'm talking probably 3 feet by 3 feet some point, big guys.
Mm-hmm.
One of those that I really love is parhelion.
Okay.
Parhelion's a really beautiful plant. It has a white edge. Very, very, almost a yellow foliage. I'm a nut for yellow hosta. So
well, they really pop in the shady areas.
They do.
That's nice about it.
Yes.
And I love some of the blues.
Yes.
You know, and even like guacamole, how it has kind of that blue edge.
Yes.
But it's got that limey green.
Yes.
And it's pretty. It's a lot of that color.
It is.
With just a slight margin on the outside.
And I think good slug resistance, too. That's the other thing. You always have to take into consideration that the slugs want what you have.
You know, and the old-fashioned hostas, you know, Albo marginata and some of those other ones, they used to get slugs nonstop.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And these newer varieties definitely are much better and slug resistant, aren't
right.
they?
Right. Well, and especially if you look at ones that have the more heavily corrugated leaves, so they have a lot denser tissue on them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem to bother those as much. And I also grow quite a few of the mini hostas. I grow them in hypertufa, and I don't have a lot of slug damage on those either, depending on the variety.
And those are, you're talking about, you know, when we say small, we're talking a foot and under.
Way under. Mm-hmm. I have some that only get a few inches tall.
Oh, those are fun.
Yeah.
How many varieties do you have in your garden?
Oh, boy. You know, I should know this, but I know I have, I'd guess all told 100.
Do you really? That's really cool. That's really cool because, you know, I love hostas. I don't have as much space as I want for hostas. For some reason, the way my house is sitting and the way the sun hits, it gets sun on all four sides somehow.
Yes.
Now, my northeast side is the shadier side, but because the way the house sits, it actually gets some sun.
Right.
So that's kind of the morning sun, so I have a lot of them there. But one of my favorites is Blue Angel.
Oh, that's a great plant.
You know, and
absolutely.
I know it's traditional, and you're going to find with me, sometimes I stick with the ones that I know are just really
sure.
work well. And Blue Angel is one that I've planted myself and I use. What I love about it, though, too, and a lot of the hostas, is the winter hardiness.
Yes.
Yeah, they're not going to care what's going on outside today.
Nope.
Not going to care.
Just get more every year.
Mm-hmm. You know, like specifically the Blue Angel, it'll go down to a zone 3.
Yes.
That's cold. I mean, we're zone 6. So, I mean, we're talking up into Minnesota and really getting far north.
Yes.
And they'll do just fine. But, you know, one thing remember with hostas, you buy this plant and it's usually pretty small when you buy it.
Yeah.
It's going to grow. So
yes.
You really need to be educated on what it's going to do, because if you pick something like a sun and substance that gets really big, you know, when you first get them, they have big leaves on them, but there's not a lot of leaves usually, you know, and they'll really spread out because they'll get 6 feet wide.
They will. And another thing to keep in mind, one of the reasons I love hosta too is because most of them are fairly vigorous plants, so they need to be divided every 3 to 5 years. Guess what? That just means I get more hosta.
Exactly.
So,
or you can share them.
Yeah, you can share them with friends. And so that's another reason that it's easy to recommend, because even if you have the larger varieties, and I know I love Blue Angel, but we were talking about favorite varieties, and one of the sports of Blue Angel that I have is Guardian Angel.
Oh, yes.
And it's a misted variety. Mm-hmm. Absolutely stunning.
Yep. And then what I also like about some of these hostas is that they also will attract hummingbirds.
Yes.
A lot of them will do that. And I actually didn't know that as much until just recently, but they really do a good job, surprisingly.
Yes.
Which I found fascinating because they bloom a little bit later, and I always thought the hummingbirds were sooner, but it's just more food for them while they are there. So if you can get them
there.
The
more sources you can give them, the better they'll.
You know, a new variety coming out that I really want to grow this year, and I haven't had any experience, but I love the color because it's got a blue margin with the yellow center. and it's called High Society.
Yes, I don't know that's a beauty. That I have not grown it yet, but I have seen it.
It's a shorter one, so yes. It's only going to be 8 inches, with the flowers 12 inches tall.
Yes.
So it's smaller, but it really is. It's drought tolerant, which most of the hostas are incredibly drought tolerant.
Yes.
You know, that's what I love about that. You know, the humidity, because we have humidity issues in Cincinnati.
Yes.
And most of our hostas really, really
very tolerant.
Have some problems. So, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue some of our favorite hostas and talk about some of our favorite varieties. So if you have anything you want to add to this talk, feel free to give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. If you're just joining us today, thanks for coming in or tuning in with us. And our good friend Darlene Cooper is sitting in for Tony today. He is out. And we have just been having a great discussion on hostas. And I think we could do a whole show on hostas.
I think we could.
I mean, there are so many varieties and there's different sizes. And we've been talking about some of the ones we do and we don't like. And you had another one that you really, really, really liked.
Well, as I said, I really am a big fan of the yellow varieties. And I think one of the prettiest ones I've grown recently is one called Key West. Mm-hmm. What's not to love about it? It makes you think you're in Key West because it's very
like
tropical.
To be there now?
It wouldn't be bad.
The sand. The surf. The seagull.
The sea.
No, that's not, yeah. I can imagine it, but right now we're not getting that. But yeah, it is a beautiful plant.
Absolutely.
And what size, like if a customer says, hey, well, I don't know that variety, how big does that one get?
Key West is a medium grower. That's probably in that 18 to 24 inch range. Long term, it's not a real big plant. It's not the most vigorous plant in my garden, but it is really a ray of sunshine.
That's
it's
a great
so
show
bright.
To it, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely.
Really a great show.
Yes.
You know, one of the ones I like, and this was popular a few years back, and there was a picture of this hosta that was 5 to 6 feet tall, and this little person standing right next to it, and the plant was taller. Empress Wu.
That's a good plant. I was skeptical. When I first acquired it, I thought it was like watching paint dry.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's really taken hold, and mine was probably 3 by 3 last year.
Was it? And how long has that been in?
This is year 3.
Okay, yeah, because mine's about 3 years, and mine's probably a little smaller than that.
Yep.
Because I planted some of these in my yard. I want to see if they really get as big
Absolutely.
As they say.
Yeah.
You know,
live up
happens.
To the hype.
Yeah. So, but sometimes when we plant these hostas, we got to remember that sun is really going to affect how these go. So
it is.
If you put a hosta, like a blue hosta, in a full sun area, not going to be good.
You're not going to be happy with the results. The blue are probably the least tolerant of the most sun. So those are going to be your deeper shade lovers and dappled shade lovers.
And when we talk about shade, we got to remember what full sun is. There are classifications and there are kind of some guidelines you could go by. And when we say full sun, we're really meaning kind of 6 hours or direct sunlight or more.
Exactly.
You know, and that's going to be hot. And that's, I know they have some sun hostas out there. And you and I were talking on the break that there might be some varieties that can handle that, but I'm still a little skeptical of that.
I think 6 hours is a lot. Maybe if you have irrigation, possibly. Mm-hmm. And as I was, we were talking about, I think sum and substance, because that was bred for sun. Mm-hmm. I think any of the sports of sum and substance are probably going to be your best bets for those higher sun areas, but they're shade plants.
Do you find that the lighter varieties do better in sun?
I find the yellow and the variegated varieties seem to be more tolerant. Again, the more blue you get in there, the less tolerant.
And
they
when
are.
We say full sun, we mean that's 6 hours. And then partial sun to part shade, we're kind of talking 3 to 6.
Yes.
And that's when some of those yellows can start to handle that quite a bit better.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I'll find that when we get into summer, just that tip might burn a little bit and kind of dry out. But for the most part, the foliage is pretty good still.
Yeah, I think by August, almost all hosta are going to look like they've been through a hot summer, no matter where they've been. But again, unless you have irrigation.
Right. And so one of my favorites is more of a dappled sun, you know, where we might be, you know, 3 to 4, but it's shaded by some trees.
Yes.
That's where I'm finding I'm having probably the most success with some of those part sun varieties.
Agree.
That they say. Because I know even when we get into late summer, you know, we're not drying out.
Yeah, my north and my east are definitely the places where my hosta are the happiest. I have them in other locations, but they have to get some relief from
high
sun. And
there are varieties that'll handle full shade a lot better. Oh, you know, especially those bluer ones and those darker ones. You know, and when we talk full shade, we're talking 3 hours or less.
Yes.
Most of the time when we say full, we really mean a lot less. Yes. Almost none.
Yes.
You know, but the hostas will actually, if you put the right one, will actually be fine with that.
Yes.
So I have a trick. Is there any tricks that you have if you're having struggling with hostas? Have you ever planted them like around a birch tree and, you know, the birch draw up so much water? Sometimes it's really hard to grow a hosta underneath those.
Yes.
Have you found anything? Have you got any tricks for growing hostas, or you just kind of had some pretty good luck?
Although I've been told by many people, especially rosarians, they love Epsom salts, and they're always saying, hey, Epsom salts are really a great soil additive.
To add to them.
But I haven't done it. I seem to do pretty well with them as a rule. And like I said, I have three dogs. I have a half-blind greyhound. So the fact that he doesn't dig them all out is a major miracle.
Well, and the reason I brought that up is because I had a customer who had some large maples and some birch trees kind of together.
Yes.
Two trees that draw up a lot of moisture. And she loves hostas. And she really struggled to get her hostas to grow. So what we did was I got a 25-gallon large container.
Mm-hmm.
We actually planted them, the containers, in the ground.
Oh, wow.
And we put the potting soil in, and then we started planting our hostas. And over time, what we found is the hostas did fine because the roots were going around the plastic pot. Now, she had to do a little bit of irrigation herself to help control the moisture.
Mm-hmm.
She was still getting some rainwater, but what we found is she never had any issues. They would not dry out over the summer like they constantly would, and she had hostas throughout the whole bed.
Oh, boy.
After a while, she had to dig them up, pull them up, split them.
Yes.
Like you did normally.
Yeah.
And then put some back in, put some more fresh dirt back in, and then let them grow again.
Yeah.
And we had great success with those areas where you're really not getting a hosta to grow well because of how dry the soil would get in the summer.
Yes.
And she was an older lady, so I did a lot of the work for her. She just would do the watering.
Right.
And she loved it.
Yeah.
And she, you know, I'd drive by the house and I could see her out working and just kind of deadheading and kind of cleaning up the hostas.
Yeah.
But she actually was able to get some underneath these real dry areas.
Yes. So
there are some tricks you can do, but I still like mounding my soils a little bit on my hostas, not sitting them in deep root water. I know they can handle some moisture, but I just, when you control the moisture, I think they do better.
And I think too, if you amend as you should.
And what do you like to amend with? Tony and I have... We both love to amend. He does, you know, some soils with some topsoils and some peat. I'm a big compost manure guy.
I'm a compost manure girl.
You're a compost manure. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I think that helps.
I just don't know how much peat brings from a fertility standpoint. I know that compost brings fertility.
I agree. I think it really Garden Magic makes an incredible compost manure.
Their products are amazing.
It's sterilized, so you're not getting the weeds. It's balanced.
Even their topsoil. I mean, their bagged topsoil is very
wonderful.
Nice.
You're going to pay more for some of these products, but Garden Magic, I know a lot of independent garden centers, you're not going to find that in the box stores.
Correct.
But you're going to find that product, and you will pay more than the 99-cent special at the box store. When you buy a 99-cent special, you're getting 99
you get,
cents
You get what
worth,
you pay for.
You know, where the other stuff, you're getting something better. So, is there any other varieties that you'd like to mention that you
Well,
really like?
I know this is really silly. One of my favorite varieties, and I mean, it's got to be in my top 10, is an old variety called Devon Green. It's just a straight green hosta, but it's so dark and so lush, very, very shiny foliage and very heavy texture on it.
Mm-hmm.
It really looks beautiful all year.
Around a while.
It's been around a while,
you know,
yes.
But don't you just love some of those ones that you know are tried and true?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Regal Splendor. That's an old one. That's a great plant.
Yeah, I remember that one even when Grandpa was around. So,
yeah.
You know, he.
I was probably around when Grandpa was around.
Well, I don't know about that. So, you know, another variety that I want to grow, I haven't done yet, is Komodo Dragon.
Yes.
It's a big green.
It is.
And it is big.
It's a really nice plant. Actually, you know, I do think I have. My son gifted me with Komodo Dragon.
Did
so
he?
Now I have to remember where I have it. But I love the big varieties.
You know, and that's what's fun about hostas. If you're out there and you're kind of wanting to maybe do a little, you can do just a hosta garden. And it can be interesting with all the different colors.
You know, you put hosta, to me, the prettiest gardens are, they have a hosta and the Lenten rose and ferns. I mean, you can really make a splash.
You know, when we were talking about shade perennials last week, you know, ferns are one I love.
Yes.
They're just easy. They're deer resistant.
Yep.
You can get so much different varieties and sizes. They can handle some moisture.
My autumn fern still has foliage on it.
Does it really?
Yep.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's evergreen.
Yeah. And you know what's great, though, is it's that, because we've been so warm, it's still very pretty.
Yep.
And you're not worried about the snow, are you?
Nope.
It'll be perfectly fine. So, you know, but if you love hostas, there's a lot out there. There are probably enough to, your mind will be blown when you start looking. But the key is to look and be educated.
Go to the hostalibrary.org.
Get what size that, you know, you want. Get the small, get the big. There's a lot out there, but know what you're buying. If you don't know, that's where the independent garden centers who support this show will really help you with that. So, but we got to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our talk about plants, because both Darlene and I are plant nerds. But we're going to get into some ornamental trees. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to In and Around the House. That just kind of gets you in a nice, smooth mood right there, doesn't it? So thank you, Alex. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just waking up with us, good morning. And also, if you take a look outside, the snow is falling, and it's been falling for several hours now. So if you don't have to go anywhere, just stay put. And if you do, please give yourself some extra time and be cautious. Some friends of mine have texted me and said the roads out in Batavia are very slick right now. So that's an update that I got. So thank you, Jace, for that. And I know the roads are slick because we're looking outside the studio here. Cars are moving, but you can definitely tell the road is not clear. So please be cautious. Thank you to all the road crews that are out there. I know I've said it. I want to say it again, because without the men and women that are out there all night long plowing, salting, getting our roads clear, we couldn't get around, and things would be tough. So thank you. And also be cautious and courteous to those guys, because, you know, they have been up already for quite a while, and they're just trying to get everything cleared for everybody. So, but when we came, we're coming back out of the break. I'd mentioned we're going to talk some ornamental trees.
Yahoo!
Yeah, you like this. This is kind of your gig too, isn't it? I'm learning more about you. You are a plant nerd. I'm impressed. So,
I can put you to sleep in 2.2.
not me, because I'm a plant nerd too. I love this stuff. So, but ornamental trees, I think, are fascinating because, one, they can be standalones.
Yes.
Sometimes the right ones in a grouping actually look amazing.
Yes.
Sometimes they're just kind of one that maybe are kind of off to the side, you don't pay attention to. And sometimes they are the main show.
Absolutely.
So
I agree.
If I come, I'm walking in the garden center, and hey, Darlene, I've really got a spot. I'm looking for an ornamental tree. You know, size isn't an issue. I can do whatever. Where are you going? Where are you sending me to?
Well, if size isn't an issue, probably at the top of my list, and I have to give a shout out to a great guy I work with, Brad Doyle. Brad was in love with the snow goose cherry.
Mm.
If it was a woman, he would have run away with it. and he just kept hyping it to me and telling me, oh, I've got one. It's so great. It's so great. You need one of these. And he finally wore me down. I brought it home, and my husband said, where's that going to go? And I said, well, wherever I tell you to dig the hole, of
That's
course.
Right. Wherever I put it.
And we actually flanked it, our garage. It's off of our garage only about 6 or 8 feet. And it's been very well mannered in terms of its growth habit. It looks like it's covered in snow in April. It's just.
Is it a double bloomer or a single bloom?
It's a single.
It's a single bloom.
But there are some great. Well, the Yoshino is also a great variety. That's featured at the Cherry Blossom Festival in Washington every year.
Yeah.
Kwanzaan is a double blooming pink.
I love that one.
Nice fall color on the cherries. They get a really interesting sort of an apricot, peach yellow color.
The fall color.
The
great.
Bark is amazing. It's just as it gets older, it gets smoother and more coppery.
Yes.
So that would be one that I could. Thank you, Brad. I love my snow goose.
Yes, the snow goose. And when you look at the pictures, the white flower, it's just a pure white flower. It is a beautiful tree. It's going to give you the spring bloom.
Yes.
I guess the only disadvantage, like any cherry, is if it blooms and we get that cold, cold, cold snap.
Yeah, and I find I haven't had too much trouble with cold snaps as much as I have with rain snaps.
Really? So the heavy rain kind of beats
heavy
it down.
Rain will just blow those blooms right off of it.
And that tree's kind of a round shape. It's a little different than the Kwanzaa.
It's not your typical vase.
Yes.
It definitely does have more of a round
shape. But it's
going to
be a little bit closer to maybe what you do like down in D.C. and what people, when they think of the cherries, that one's going to be one of the closer
ones. And, you know, those cherries are going to get in that 25, 30-foot range.
Right.
So that's larger for
it
an
is.
Ornamental.
Yes, but you know what? There are times where that larger ornamental tree is called for.
And that cherry is making some beautiful shade for my little hosta addiction, too.
Absolutely. So, no, I think that's a beautiful tree. And, you know, when you even throw the ornamental weeping cherries in there, which I know are very common, but they're very pretty.
I'm more of a fan of the snow fountain than I am of some of the pink flowering forms because of the variability on size.
Yes. The pink varieties get huge.
They do.
I had one at my house that I tried to keep trimmed for about 10 years. Small, like a snow fountain.
Yes.
I trimmed it 3 times a year. I would trim 8 feet off branches. I mean, I'd go in there and have to take a little handsaw because I'm not going to take a chainsaw to it. Well, I did eventually. But finally, it was growing so fast, I couldn't keep it under control, it that small.
Right.
So once again, when you look at the cherries, the snow fountain white weeping cherry is going to be one you can keep in a tighter area.
Yes.
It's going to be much smaller as opposed to a pink variety, which is going to be a double bloom, but it gets big.
Yeah.
But if you put that big one out in the yard and it kind of canopies out at different levels, it can be very pretty.
You know, it's really funny. One of my neighbors had one and it got enormous. And then we had the year that we had that really bad cold snap, it died. And they cut the graft. The top graft off.
Yeah.
And now that tree is just a standard
regular cherry
tree.
You know, that happens a lot. My one of my best friends, his cherry tree was a weeping cherry, has done that.
Yeah.
My neighbors up the road did the same thing, and they just have an upright cherry tree. So it's very pretty. So one of my favorites that I like to go to, and this is going to be on the smaller side, the Ruby Falls Redbud.
Oh, love that plant.
Yeah,
I love
the red buds in general.
I do too.
I love the, you know, the spade shaped leaf, but specifically the Ruby Falls is going to have that darker color leaf.
Very elegant.
Very pretty. The flowers are all along those stems.
Yes.
But what I like about that is you can keep it close to a sidewalk and close to a driveway. It's not going to get too big. And it's one of those where when people see it, especially when it's in bloom because of that dark rose color bloom, you're like, what is that?
Yes. We have the, I think it's Covey, is the green leaf form planted at the garden center, and it is very well behaved. It's probably 8 to 10 feet tall by about 5 feet wide.
That's the key. They just don't get that wide, because even the snow fountain cherry, you know, unless you really know what you're doing trimming-wise, you don't get 10 feet wide.
Yes.
It really will. It can get a little unruly and even kind of a little bit odd-shaped if you don't know how to trim it. Where this one is really, really slender. I mean, it stays tight.
And they're all pretty, they're all very, very similar. We'll get big groups of them in the spring, and there really aren't any, they're pretty cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm. They are.
As far as form.
Yeah, you buy 10 of them look pretty much the same.
Yes.
That's what's nice.
I love Rising Sun, too. I think that's a really pretty one.
Have you had as much success with the hardiness of Rising
Sun? It's not as vigorous.
It's not, is it? I've had the same thing, like Hearts of Gold,
yes.
I think is that upright version. I found that some of the gold varieties of the red buds, I know they're our zone, but they're marginal.
Yep.
Where, you know, if you were down in Lexington or even a little
just
farther
fine.
South and
yep.
you pick up a zone or two, I find they do a little bit better. But this Ruby Falls, I've had pretty good success
with
it.
Oh, yeah. That's a winner.
That's
absolutely
a winner. So, you know, we went to the bigger one. What would be another one if I came to you and said, hey, Darlene, I need an ornamental, but I need a showpiece. Where are we going?
Well, If we're going, I would say, well, then you need more Japanese maples.
I agree with you.
Only because, and I know that they don't, technically they don't flower, I guess you could say. They flower in my world. But to me, when you look at all the attributes of what an ornamental brings to the landscape, and that would be things such as bloom, that would be form, that would be bark, mm-hmm. and that would be fall color.
Right.
Hardiness is certainly a piece of it, too. But I've been collecting Japanese maples for many years now, and I just see the diversity that exists from plant to plant, and they all bring a different element to the garden. One that I think is fantastic is one called Punkil.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very, very heavily cut red lace leaf upright. It gets a little bit bigger, but wow, it's really something.
How big is that one? Is that like the
Ibarachia? I'm going to say probably 20.
Okay. Gets that big?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, hang on to that thought. We're going to come back because I got some more questions about ornamentals, and I have some that I like. So stick with us. It looks like it's starting to get a little brighter out there, believe it or not. But unfortunately,
that's actually snow, Bob.
I know it is. The snow is falling. But, be cautious if you're heading out. But stick with us. We're going to continue our talk on ornamentals. We'll be right back. Good morning. You're listening to In and Around the House with Tony Works. Tony is out today, and he did this on purpose. He picked a good day to be off. There's no doubt about it.
You're right.
So, Darlene Cooper is filling in with us, and we've been all over the board, but we're really getting, both of us are getting excited because we've been talking plants for the last hour.
Spring will come.
We're going to really continue talking about plants the rest of the show. So we've got a lot to discuss, and we are definitely going to have some fun. But we were talking about ornamental trees, and
yes.
You were talking about some Japanese maples. And what are some other varieties of Japanese maples you really like?
Well, probably the top performer. There are two really outstanding performers, very, very different plants. Aconit folium is an upright form that gets about 20 to 25 feet tall. So it's a larger Japanese maple.
More of a broadleaf type.
It is a broadleaf. Mm-hmm. And the fall color is exceptional. It looks as though it's on fire.
Really?
I always have reds, yellows, and oranges through it. And then a really lowly, very common variety that people walk by constantly, and it breaks my heart, is Viridis.
Yes.
And that is a lace leaf form, very, very small, depending on where the graft is. But I have an old one that's probably 15 years old. It may be 6 feet tall.
Really?
Maybe.
I like some of those smaller ones.
I like this one because it was like a sweet gum. It came in bands this year. One day it was green, the next day it was a little bit orange, then it was a little bit red, then it was a little bit yellow. And it's mind-blowing, the color in the fall.
You know, I know it's pretty common, but I like is Red Dragon.
Oh, Red Dragon's an exceptional plant.
I just love the fall color of Red Dragon. I like the fact that it's small enough and you can trim it. It can stay pretty contained.
Yes.
But sometimes Japanese maples, they'll say a size.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean
they'll
stay that size.
Well, even the small weeping ones, they get so wide.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that pruning habit comes in handy, because mm-hmm. then you can kind of keep them under control.
Yeah, I've got the one at my house is about 5x5, but I get in there and I love the thin. Take my hand pruning.
Yes.
Really thin.
I want to be able
maples.
To see the character of the plant.
Oh, because most of them have very... A curvy trunk is really good on them to me. It's the straight grafts that I don't like.
Yes.
Because they're kind of
they're boring.
They're boring. You know, like mine, I mean, it takes a 90 degree and then comes back up and then kind of goes left 90 degrees. It's really interesting.
Like plumbing.
It really does look like plumbing, but I've had it. I mean, it was the first one, our first house. It was one of the first trees I put in. I moved it. I mean, so it's real sentimental, but I get in there. I'll bet you I fill half my truck with trimmings
once
a year because this thing grows so vigorous and I got to get in there and thin it out.
Yeah. So. And, you know, on the subject of ornamentals too, Bob, flowering trees are really amazing and they're wonderful. But what I find is it's very difficult to get all that fall color piece.
Mm-hmm. It is.
If you look at crab apples, you're not going to get any noticeable fall color.
And I'm glad you brought that up because that's one I wanted to bring up for an ornamental is the Sargentina dwarf.
Yep.
Because in the spring, it's really pretty.
Yep.
The flower is gorgeous.
Yes.
But sometimes it can get apple scab or apple rust. And then they'll kind of sucker up when you'll see what looks like little new trees trying to come up from the stems. And I love the tree. I don't use them as much because I know what the issue is.
Yes. I had a beautiful prairie fire crab apple and it was really, really beautiful. But man, the suckers, I felt like I was out there every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I know we were talking about the products such as Sucker Punch and Sucker Stopper, that you can use to keep the suckering down, but it's a hassle. And it's something you need to know about when you purchase the tree and some of that could be related to cultural practice. If they're not getting enough water and they're going to start looking for it, suckering is going to happen.
And once again, when we mention suckering, this is when you have your main tree and all of a sudden you look and there is sometimes one, sometimes 100.
15.
new stems just popping up everywhere. And they are treatable. You'd mentioned it with Sucker Punch and Sucker Stopper. But those products also have to be applied properly. A lot of people want to cut the suckers all the way to the ground and spray this product.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually work that way. You need to leave some foliage on the branches that are suckering. And if there's leaves on them, that's even better. And spray it and then wait a couple weeks. It'll die eventually.
Yep.
It's just something you have to do on a regular basis.
Yes.
So as long as you know, like the Sargentina crab apple, it's a dwarf. It's a beautiful tree.
It's very nice.
It's one, but as long as you know what you're getting, you'll be fine with it. If you don't, then you might have a little bit of an issue. So, you know, one that I like, and it doesn't really flower, and I don't even think it's used that much anymore, the Corollis contorta, the hairy outer walking stick.
Yes.
What do you think about that plant?
I had one. I had a really beautiful one. It was bigger than it should have been, but truthfully, the suckering got out of hand. But you know, and that's the tree that almost everybody says is prettier naked than with its clothes on, because the leaves are sort of
definitely
large
not
and
like
coarse.
Me, that's for sure. So.
but the stems are used to make walking sticks, the mm-hmm. shillelagh walking yep. sticks in Ireland, and so it's quite a conversation piece. It looks beautiful when it's lit at Christmas.
It's beautiful when it's lit. It has kind of that little hanging pod from it that's very
yes.
pretty. The foliage is kind of a little textured on the leaves. I think the big problem besides the suckering is this is one of those that does need selective pruning.
Yes.
If you shear this one, it doesn't yes. do anything for the plant. It just makes a round ball.
Right.
And you're not going to get the effect of the curly cue of the stems.
Correct.
So I think this is one of those where, you know, get to your independent garden centers, talk to an expert. They'll show you how to do it. And if you have one and maybe you forgot how to trim it, take a picture. Take it to a garden center
yes.
like up at Sharon. You know, take it down there to Scott Maddox. Take it to Bart at Burgers. There's a lot of guys. Take it. They can even take your picture, and they'll show you.
Yep.
They can even take a little Sharpie and say, cut it here, cut it here. I do that all the time.
I do, too.
You know, because people don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And they want to learn. So
people are fearful of pruning. They're really worried that they'll kill a plant by pruning
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. So we're going to take another quick break right now, but when we come back, we're going to kind of step away from the ornamentals, and we're going to kind of go to a little more of a shade tree type. It's something we can start looking at for the future. So it's snowing outside, you're inside, just stick around with us. We got a great show. If you want to add something to it, give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back. Morning. On this beautiful, wonderful, lovely Cincinnati day, or maybe not. yes. You are new to Cincinnati. You have just been baptized with the traditional Cincinnati weather, where we cover all seasons in 1 week. Congratulations. Thanks for being a part of it. So, and if you are living in Cincinnati, you know we have to come to expect this.
Yes.
You know. And the good news is we live in Cincinnati. It's going to change again.
That's right. Don't get used to it. It'll go away.
But it's not going to change, at least for probably, it looks like maybe even up to 24 hours or so. It looks like the snow is going to be steady pretty much throughout the day. Pretty much typical right now. They're still saying 4 to 6 inches, some a little less, some a little more. It's pretty cold outside here at the studio. It's only 29 degrees with a wind chill of 25. So if you are going out, bundle up. Also, make sure you fill your gas tank.
Yeah.
You know, if you're riding around and your gas tank is maybe only an eighth full, you might want to stop and fill it up just in case you get stuck in a traffic jam or something really bad. So having some extra gas, that way you know you can keep the car running for a little while if you have to and stay warm. So, but we are definitely warm in the studio. We are talking about, you know, upcoming spring, and we've been talking plants and trees. You know, and I think shade, I love shade trees.
I do, too.
I love the benefit. I love, you know, if they're put in the right spot, how they have a majestic look when they get to be the yes. right size. I find sometimes people plant too big of a tree in a small area.
Yes.
I think this is one of those times where the shade trees, you see this tree and you're like, oh, I want one. But you maybe don't have enough room for it. So,
yes.
You know, one of my favorites, and it's actually been around, they say, for ages, is the ginkgo.
Since the dinosaurs.
Since the dinosaur age. So, but what I love about the ginkgo is the fan-shaped leaves.
Yes. It's
very different leaf. I love the bark because it has that
beautiful,
interesting texture and different look to it. But I love the fall color.
Yes.
If you want a yellow tree in the fall.
It's exceptional.
I don't know if there's one better for yellows.
I don't either, especially from a hardiness perspective, because they're tough as nails.
Yeah. It's one you're going to plant and it's going to outlive you.
Yes.
It should. And probably your kids and your grandkids.
Yes.
It's going to live a long time.
Yes.
So, but I love this tree. It does get a little size, so you just got to make sure that you have room. One of the best ones that I ever saw was actually out on the east side over off Nordyke Road. But unfortunately, the homeowner had planted it too close to the house, but they were letting it grow.
Yeah.
But it was big, so it was kind of one-sided.
Yeah.
You know, because it was up against a chimney and kind of the house. I wouldn't recommend putting it there, but if you have room for a tree, you know, 40, 50 foot tall, got some width to it, I don't think you can go wrong with the ginkgo.
No, I would agree. It's a really nice tree.
And you have to, you know, you'll read online that you have to have, you don't want a female because of they stink. Let's just put it out there.
They have a very nasty fruit.
They do. But typically in the garden centers, you're not seeing any females. Nobody's growing females anywhere.
No.
I mean.
Not on purpose.
No, I've never had one in the store.
Correct.
I don't know if you have at your garden center, whether you guys have had anything there. So.
No, we sell the usual suspects.
Yeah. You know, is it, when you first get it, though, you got to realize it's probably going to have a different look to it. Because they're kind of, especially with no leaves, they don't look the most attractive tree they're little.
They're not the cheapest tree out there either. No, so even to get a decent size one is a little pricey. And they're just a little like an awkward teenager looking kind of a tree when you get them. But boy, they really become something fabulous over time.
Yeah, they do. They're kind of the ugly duckling that turns into the most beautiful tree out there.
The handsome prince.
Yeah, handsome prince, that's for sure. So what is one of your favorites? I know that's one of my favorites. What's one of your go-tos?
Well, I have so many. It's going to be a toss-up. I love our native black gum.
Okay.
I think it's a really fabulous tree. I have four of them on my property, and it does need room. It's a wide tree. It branches very horizontally, so you have to give it plenty of space. And it's once it roots in, it grows pretty quickly.
Yes.
But again, fall color is just mind-blowing on it.
How big are yours?
The three brothers that I have are probably 35 or so feet tall.
How long have they been in there?
We've been in our home 21 years, so they've been there almost that whole time.
Yeah.
So not the fastest growing tree out there, but again, native, so highly adaptable to poor soil types.
We have poor soil around here? What are
Do
you
we?
Talking about?
Do we?
We really have poor soil? You mean our clay that gets so dry, it just squishes everything underneath the ground?
Well, you know, with the clay, don't forget the cable wire and the beer cans,
sure.
You can usually find those too.
You know, I found spark plugs in times when I've driven for people. I found all. Unfortunately, with our business, you know, we're the last ones in the new construction, and we find everything.
A lot of
stuff. It's one that could handle that.
Yes.
It's nice to have plants that can handle it.
Yep.
It's hard to find truly native things anymore.
Yes.
You know, and that's one you can definitely find.
And they have some cultivated forms. There's a new one out called Wildfire.
And the new growth emerges
a really bright, beautiful red. And then the fall color, again, is that just fire engine red. So really pretty.
One.
Yep.
You know, another one that I really like, and I have mentioned before, but I want to bring it up again. I love the tulip tree.
The tulip tree, yes.
The tulip tree.
Yep.
I love the unique shape of the leaves.
Yes.
You know.
It's a flowering shade tree.
It does get a flower to it. Now, most people think it's part of a tulip poplar, and it's related to that family. But it actually is related to the magnolia family.
Yes. Yep.
You know, which it's a fast grower. The only disadvantage is it's a little softer.
Yes.
It's not going to be a hard
weaker wood. Yep.
So if we get a heavy ice storm in the spring, you might have a couple broken branches you have to trim and clean up.
Yep.
But I think the leaf itself is so unique compared to other trees. And I guess that's my theme because I'm kind of there with the ginkgo leaf.
Yes.
And I'm there with I guess that's what I like. Because, I mean, I love red maples. Don't get me wrong. I love them. But they're pretty common. So, you know, I love the tulip tree. Once again, though, it gets a little size.
Mm-hmm.
You got to give it room. But it has the flower.
Yeah. There's some excellent specimens up in the Granville area. My son-in-law went to Denison, and the campus there has some almost champions as far as the size of them. They're 75 to 100 feet tall.
And that brings me to something that we have to consider. When you get a shade tree, you got to have room.
Yes.
And I was at a house yesterday, and it was on the west side, which a lot of the west side houses are pretty close together.
Yep.
And there was a giant red oak. And you and I could not hug this tree together.
and all of our friends.
It was big.
Yeah.
But it had tons of acorns. Leaves were in the house of the owner that the property was on. The neighbor next door, her car was constantly getting pelted with acorns. And she was trying to figure out if there's anything she could do. I don't think we could even prune it up on her side.
No.
Because the tree's still so big, I think it's still going to get her.
Yeah.
The leaves were everywhere. So I love a red oak, but you really got to know when you're buying a shade tree how big it's going to get.
Yep.
Because I really see this in new subdivisions, and you guys do how they do too. People will take, let's just say, two red maples.
Yeah.
And they have a yard that's big enough for a cherry tree.
Yeah.
And they put two in, and they look great for about 10 years. And then all of a sudden, they just engulf the front of the house because you planted them too close together.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're planted too close together. It's just aesthetically they are.
Correct. Yeah.
So when you get the tulip tree, make sure you
give
got some
room.
Space. And honestly, I feel, I don't know how you feel, but while my shade trees, I love to have space.
Yes.
I love to have space. I want the tree.
I want to be able to view it.
To grow to the mature size that it wants to be. And it is, that's when I think they're the most majestic.
Yes. And I want people to think I thought about what I was doing when I put the tree in.
Absolutely. So you have any other ones that you really like?
I'm going to throw Tricolor Beach out there.
Oh, you're going there. I love that tree.
I do too. I just planted one for my granddaughter, and we'll see. I know they're not the easiest. They can be a little fussy.
They can be. One of the prettiest ones I saw, and the golf course is no longer out there, but it was Lindale Golf Course out by us, and they had it just a regular.
Yep.
Oh, the bark.
The beaches are just
beautiful.
Fantastic.
And then especially on that tricolor, I love that two-tone leaf.
Yes.
So, but it's temperamental, but if you get it in the right spot, it's one of those where people are going to ask questions.
That's another one we have planted at the at Sharon Nursery, and it is not well tended. We don't get around to watering it a lot. It's on the east side of the property, but it is just like a postcard. It's beautiful.
And, you know what's nice is you guys are up right on the highway.
Yeah.
There's some emissions there.
Yes.
And if it's living where you guys got it,
we don't have it on the highway side. We do.
I know, but still, you're not that far off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're close enough that it's there.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some environmental issues, and that tree seems to be doing quite well. So, yeah. You know, I'm going to go back to another one that I like, and I already kind of mentioned the red oak, but, you know, the pin oak and the bur oak, but let's go with the pin oak.
Yep.
I know a lot of people don't like the pin oak, and I know
why. Can't grow them where I am.
Because the leaves are going to just stay put, and then they're not going to do well. But I'll tell you what, if you can get them in the right spot, and they can be big, with their droopy leaves, or droopy branches hanging down, really a new, unique tree.
I love swamp white oak. I have
that.
I
do, too. I love them.
I have one of those at my house, and I think it's, again, a great native.
Do you feel like the oaks are always a slower to get started?
Yes.
Yes. I think that's the key. You know, you plant a maple, it's growing.
Yeah.
You know it's taken off, especially if you do a can and the root system's never been cut. You know, you can put a maple in. If you put it in the right spot, you can see 2 to 3 foot a year.
Yeah.
Oak, you will eventually.
Eventually, yes.
But it takes a while to get there. Yeah. So it's a slow starter. So, you know, my grandpa always used to say the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, with an oak tree, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, but some of these other ones, like the tulip tree, it grows a little bit faster, and some of these other ones. But, you know, is there anything else that you really, really like?
Believe it or not, I'm really kind of a fan of Zelkova.
Oh, you are. Oh. Oh, you touched my heart. I love that tree.
I really like Zelkova a lot. It's a tree that should have caught on but didn't. And I have it in my front yard. I love the shape of it.
Mm-hmm.
I like the bark on it. I like everything about it. I have several elms on my property as well, and I like the elms, but let me tell you, they're a little messy.
They're messy. Sometimes the elms, I've noticed the Japanese beetles, if we have a bad infestation, can really love the elm.
Yep.
It's treatable, but it's not easily treatable. But, no, I love the Zelkova, and I've mentioned that before on the show. My daughter's former elementary school, when the school was new, they planted all kinds of trees.
Mm-hmm.
There were service berries, there were pines, there were spruces, and they did not care for them because their job was to educate, not take care of that. And it was hard. The grounds were big, so whoever was trying to take care of it did not have an easy time. The Zelkovas did exceptionally well, and they're kind of along the driveways and parking areas, so you know they got hotter. The soil wasn't as nice. You know there's more gravel around everywhere, but they're also the shape. Allows you still to drive through.
Yes.
You're not hitting everything. An oak tree will branch out and hang over, and everybody's going to hit it with their car.
Yep.
You know, where the Zelkova having that little more of an upright shape. And I also love the fact that the leaves are so small, they're easy to clean up.
Yes, yes. Agree.
So I think that's important. And so when those leaves are falling, you don't really rake them.
Yeah.
Where with the pin oak, you're going to rake them in the spring.
Yes.
You know.
Along with your pear.
Along with your pear. Oh, and the pears, boy, did they get beat up from that last ice storm.
So. Hooray.
So, but we're going to take another quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to get it. I know Darlene and I both are excited. We want to start talking about some sun perennials because spring isn't that far off. And we're going to hopefully give you some ideas to really help enhance that garden. So if you want to add anything to the conversation, give us a call at 749-B105. If you want to tell us what your favorite perennial is, we'd love to share with you and talk about it. But once again, just give us a call. Stay put. We'll be right back. It was warm.
There was none.
We were playing Christmas music, and there was no snow. But if you like snow, you are a happy, happy, happy camper right now because it is coming down. We are looking outside the studio windows, and it is definitely coming down, and it's going to come down for a while. So if you don't have to be anywhere, stay put. Hopefully you got your milk and your bread and everything you needed. And you can just kind of hunker down and enjoy the day. There's a lot going on today. If you're a college basketball fan, there's some NFL football. So there's plenty to do, not to mention just your DIY network. So do it yourself so you can learn some other things. So, but when we were going into the break, we had been talking a lot about trees. And I thought, let's take a switch for a minute. Let's talk about some sun perennials.
Yippee.
And once again, we could do a whole show on this. You know, and first of all, let me ask you, is there a color scheme or any particular color of perennial you lean towards?
Well, it's funny you should ask. Well, I have a memorial garden for my mother, and my mother's favorite color was purple,
yeah.
And it's my favorite color.
Okay.
So that garden is pretty heavy in purple.
Oh, that's
I have
beautiful.
Contrasting color in
sure.
there. But I don't know. I feel the same way about perennials as I do about everything else. I want a long bloom cycle.
Yep.
I want good hardiness. I want vigor if I can get it. If I don't have to do a lot of pruning on my perennials because I'm so busy mowing on all my other plants, that's
right.
a good thing.
Right.
But
So what are some of the perennials you have in that garden?
In my mother's garden, I actually have quite a few perennial geraniums.
Oh, I love geraniums.
You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Roseanne because it is a really great plant. I think it's a lot like Knockout where we in the garden centers get a little burned out on it. But you really, it's very, very hard to beat for the tenacity for the as long as it blooms. And once it goes through that really, really heavy bloom cycle, if you cut it back to nubs, mm-hmm. before you know it, it's back doing it all over again.
I think that's a great perennial. And I do agree with you. Sometimes we can overuse that. But for those who want a really easy perennial.
Yes, that's one.
The Roseanne geranium is easy.
Yep.
And it doesn't get out of control.
No.
You know, one that I like is Coreopsis. But sometimes Coreopsis can spread.
Yes.
And get, you know, it can take over
yep.
for people. I don't feel the geranium does that at all, really.
No, most of mine are pretty well behaved. Another one that a lot of people don't use, it's actually, and now I'm going to forget the species name. It's a pink flowering form, and I have forgotten the species name, but it blooms such a long time. You know, when people come into the garden center looking for perennials, they say, I want something that blooms all summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to put them in the annual house and say,
right.
well, here you have it.
Right.
There are some really, you know, another one that's I think is really worth mentioning, Bob, is the Agastaches. Lot of really great, those are hyssops.
Right.
Those are hardy hyssops for this area, some hardier than others.
Do you have some of those in your garden?
I do.
Do you?
I actually have Agastache rupestre, which is a Mexican hyssop, and
okay.
which is overwintered beautifully for
Has
me.
Has it really?
Yes.
No issues?
No issues.
We've had some cold winters. How long have you had that?
The one that I have had the longest is probably 5 years or
so. Oh, so it's really survives a couple cold winters.
And then there were a couple new, there's one called Blue Adder. There are a couple new varieties out this year that I thought were, there's one called Mission Bell's Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Exceptionally long blooming. Huge hummingbird attractor.
Really?
So that's one I could easily recommend. I'm sorry, that's not an Agastache. That's a penstemon. Sorry.
Okay.
I got
All
ahead
right.
of myself.
All right.
But anyway, no.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And there's some, you know, I'm a traditionalist. So
yes.
I like even some of the ones that have been around for a while. And last week, Tony and I talked about the perennial of the year. And, you know, the first one was in 1991. And, you know, it was the Heuchera, the Palace Purple.
Yes.
You know, and. But what was interesting is a lot of those perennials of the year, we're still using years later. And, you know, on the break, and I just mentioned, you know, I still like Zagreb coreopsis. I know it spreads, so I can handle it. I know it gets even a little mildew at the end of the year. I can handle that.
I like Zagreb better than Moonbeam, absolutely.
It flowers a long time. Yep. It's bright yellow. I think it mixes well with annuals.
Yes.
So if you want to kind of get some layering effect with seasonal color, you can add some perennials, so you got them year after year after year, and then throw, I specifically threw some wave petunias with it, and it really added some interest with the dark purple or the blue petunia and the yellow.
Yep.
And I love that
color
scheme. Great
color
combo. I'm kind of leaning towards the purples a lot, too. So when you said that, I was like, because I love salvia.
Yeah.
And another one that I really love, and unfortunately it went on the invasive species list this year, was the loosestrife.
Yeah. But, you know, I have very mixed emotions. There are people that are such purists. They come into the garden center and say, if you sell loosestrife, I'm not going to shop here because it's such a bad plant. But the cultivated forms, like Morden's Gleam.
Morden's was great. It never spread.
I never saw any seeding from that plant in my garden at all.
Mm-mm.
And when you want to talk about a seed, I mean, that thing blooms like crazy.
And when you want a pollinator, the bees go crazy.
Yep.
So, and I understand, like, that loosestrife, if you look it up online, it's just going to tell you how it's a horrible plant.
Yep.
And there are varieties that just take over wetlands.
Yes.
You know, and I get that. But I had some planted at the nursery for probably 12 years right outside my office.
Yeah.
And it was right by walkways, and the bees were on it all summer. Nobody got stung because they were so busy on that plant. But it would bloom for 3 months, and it would get big. And I know they took it off, and I know why they took it off. But sometimes I always wonder, do we have to take them all off, or can we just get a
variety? Yeah.
I think it did.
Yeah.
But I love that one. But, you know, another one, and I know it's very traditional, but I love coneflower.
Yes.
I know they can get a little bit of spots on their leaves and, you know, kind of get a little yucky at the end. But I love coneflower.
I think
like the traditional pink.
Yes, and Magnus is probably the hardiest and the best of all the cultivars. You know, they're making a new coneflower about every other day of the week now, and I just haven't had great success with overwintering.
Sunrise, sunset. Have you had as much luck with those?
No, as I was telling you, I grew hot papaya, and I had it for 5 years, and it was this beautiful, striking red. Mm-hmm. And then 1 year, it was just gone.
Yeah.
So I think we still have some hardiness stuff to figure out on some of these cultivated forms.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to take you to something, because we, as garden centers and landscapers, and even a lot of landscape architects, completely overuse this plant, was the Stella de Ora daylily.
Yes.
I mean, and don't get me wrong, it blooms well. If you need something easy, Memorial Day, you'll get a big splash of color. Middle of July, you'll get a little splash of color, and maybe Labor Day, a little splash of color.
Yeah.
But don't you feel like there's maybe some other varieties that are...
Well, I think Happy Returns is a better plant all the way around. The color's clearer, it's brighter, it's truer.
As opposed to an orangey-yellow, it's
a
yellow.
It's a lemon yellow.
It is,
and so it
is.
Blends with other colors much easier. And, you know, I understand that people enjoy that plant because it's so easy. But
it's splittable.
You can divide it and use it. Mm-hmm. Well, my son hybridized daylilies, so we have a rather large collection of daylilies at my house, too.
You know, one I really like, and I know it's a daylily, but one I like is Pardon Me.
Pardon Me is not a bad plant either.
It's a little bigger.
Yep.
Doesn't bloom quite as long.
Correct.
Starts a little later.
Yep.
But it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's one that's a burgundy with a yellow throat, for those who don't know what that one is. But you got to realize this one's going to stretch height-wise. It's going to be taller than Stella's. Not as tall as a tiger, but, you know, it's going to have some height to it.
Well, I have some spider lilies, spider daylily type daylilies in my garden that get 5 feet tall.
Do you really?
Yeah. So luckily they're in the back border.
You know, one I used to use and I haven't used as much is also similar to the, pardon me, is Little Business. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Boy, you are old, Bob.
I know. I like traditional. You know, I still love peonies and I love all that stuff, but... You know, Little Business came out. It got popular and then kind of died off the other varieties. But I liked Little Business.
Well, I think, you know, we kind of come at it from two different perspectives. Because as a landscaper, you're doing constant install, and you've got to be able to find that plant.
Right.
I want all the weird stuff.
Right.
That you can only get five of every 2 months, mm-hmm. and you guys are trying to plant 30 at a time.
Right.
So, you know, there are a couple different perspectives, but there's something, like you said, there's something to be said for the tried and true varieties. The reason they're still so popular is because they live and they produce.
They do. And the perennial plant of the year, when those people go through that criteria of how they select that plant, you know, I didn't know even until just last week that they really, how stringent
yes,
it was.
Yes.
But it shows, because it shows in the longevity of the perennial that they
yes.
created. So stick with us. We're going to take a quick break. The snow is still outside at this point. But if you have a favorite perennial, if there's one that's your go-to, we'd love to hear from you. Our number 749-B105. And stick with us. We're going to continue our talk about sun perennials, so we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And if you're just waking up with us, good morning. Also, if you haven't looked outside, yeah, once again, I'm going to say it, just don't. Unless you're a snow lover, because if you are a snow lover or you want to go to perfect North Slopes, you are probably one happy camper right now. So it's 29 degrees outside right now. A wind chill feels like 24 and snow. And it looks like, according to the Weather Channel, it is going to snow pretty much for the next 24 hours. And we're going to get anywhere between 1 to 3 today, another 1 to 3 tonight, kind of finishing up sometime tomorrow, according to the Weather Channel. So we finally got winter.
Yes.
Can you believe
it? At last.
Yeah.
How many days till spring? Can you tell me?
I would love to know. I hope it's tomorrow. But I'm one of those guys that I'd be fine if our climate was like Aruba, where it went from 75 to 86 all year long. I'd be okay with that. And you know what? We could probably have some fun with some landscaping, because if we were one or zone warmer, there's a lot of things we could even really expand on.
Yeah, I'm from Columbus. I feel like I'm in the deep south. In Columbus, there were lots of things that I couldn't grow that I could grow here.
Oh, so it makes that much difference, even 2 hours away, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that. I know I've got some friends that live down in Lexington, you know, and their cherry laurels and some of that, they never have issues with them.
Yeah.
And up here, we didn't for a while, and then we had a cold winter, and then all of a sudden we did.
Yes.
You know, and there's some like sky pencil holly, which will live here, but I know we'll do better down there. But you're really pushing. I don't push those. I don't like them, because I had some and I lost them. I wanted to try them. And basically over 3 years, they just continually gradually got worse.
Yes.
The winter, so
yeah.
I think there's other options. But
ice storm would wreak havoc on that plant.
Yeah. That one I think is a cool plant. I would love to see if they came up with a variety that would be hardy for our zone, because I think we could sell it.
Yep.
But I just,
well, there's good old Grand Blandy boxwood.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I've actually taken boxwood where I lost my, sky pencils, and I actually have trimming them the same way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, and they're right at about 4.5 feet. They're perfect slenders and flat top. So
yep.
I took some green mountain and did that with them.
Yep.
And I just keep them trimmed. So, but, we're going to continue our talk on shade perennials. And when we talk, or, I'm sorry, sun perennials. Pardon me, sun perennials. And once again, let's go back. Full sun is 6 hours and above.
Yes.
When it comes to sun perennials, though, we have options.
Yes.
We have lots of options.
Lots of options.
So what's some other ones that you really like?
Well, probably a few that, I guess they fly under the radar a bit because the bloom season isn't as long, but a couple that I think are worth mentioning are just about any of the Baptisias.
Oh, yeah.
The false indigos.
Mm-hmm.
The traditional purple is a really great plant. I have one called Solar Eclipse that's a yellow form.
Yep.
And I'll tell you, people almost wreck on my cul-de-sac when it's in bloom.
Really?
It is, yeah, it's probably 4 feet tall by about 4 feet wide, and it's just a mass of bright yellow flowers. I like the form of the plant, even when it's out of bloom.
Right.
I've also gotten kind of a little addicted to some of the new Ito peonies. So those are crosses between the Japanese tree peony and an herbaceous peony.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a really, really big, sensational flower but then you get a nice clean foliage. Sometimes the Japanese tree peonies are troubled with fungal disorders
they
in
are.
The summer.
Right.
So I don't see as much of that.
You know, I'm a traditionalist. I've already mentioned this. I love peonies.
Yes.
I don't think they're used enough.
I don't either.
My grandmother-in-law loved red peonies, and I got her when she was alive. We planted some. She was living with my mother-in-law, and we planted some. And every year, she loved just the wine color.
Yes. So
there was 10 of them. They were all wine.
Yes.
When it was in bloom, there wasn't much prettier.
Yeah.
When it wasn't in bloom, there was a lot prettier.
Yeah.
But it was
I
just loved it.
I just, and I think, too, that, again, it's a hardy plant.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have to bring that to the table, too.
Absolutely.
I think there are a lot of, I love some of the ground cover sedums.
Oh, yes.
Those have been pretty hot the last couple of years for us.
Yeah, Lemon Ball was that real popular one that Proven Winter just brought out as well. That's kind of an annual one.
Yes, that is an annual, mm-hmm. but it is a really pretty annual. That's all there is to it. One that we offer that I really like is it's Sedum Catocola latakensis. So mm-hmm. it's a small border plant. Mm-hmm. It has a bluish purple tinge to the foliage. So it's very, very effective, again, with yellows behind it.
Right. There you are with your yellows, like your hostas.
Yes. I just see the vigor on the plant as being exceptional. Mm-hmm. Some of the more upright forms of sedum I'm not as crazy about because
I enjoy the traditional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The wet weather can really wreak havoc with those.
They can. And you know, sometimes if they get the right spot, they're very pretty.
Yes.
And I understand a lot of people plant them because they offer that more later fall season color or
yep.
late summer season color. So that is an advantage if you're trying to get different colors at different times. But I agree with you. I like sedum, not one of my go-tos all the time.
Right.
You know, but there's a lot of perennials that I like that you have to be willing to put up with the bad side of them, too.
Yeah.
Gallardia.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's maintenance. That's mm-hmm. all there is to it.
Yeah, Gallardia. I love the traditional Gallardia. I think it blooms well. It adds some color. It's interesting, but it can get weedy.
Yes.
It can get very weedy.
But it's a long blooming plant. It's a really nice plant.
It sort of behaves. It doesn't spread very much. But, but speaking of some that spread, like I still like the snow-capped daisies compared to some of the traditional ones because I like the smaller size. But there's disadvantage to those, too.
There is. I think Becky will outbloom snow-capped. Becky, the three-foot mm-hmm. variety,
it's
will
big.
Outbloom snow-capped all day long. But snow cap is a prettier habit.
It is. It is. So what is your, I know you said Roseanne, but what is your plant that you is an absolute must to have in your garden?
Oh, boy. That's
I know I'm putting you on the spot.
One.
We didn't talk about this, so this is my fun of like, I'm going to put her on the spot.
Well, truthfully, I mean, I really love all the perennial geraniums. It's mm-hmm. not just Roseanne. It's
Johnson's Blue.
Not a Johnson's Blue fan. I'll be honest with you. I think that's a pretty leggy one. That's one that's a little more difficult to control. Max Fry, mm-hmm. New Hampshire Purple. Mm-hmm. Those are nice varieties as well.
Absolutely. I like those. So, you know, there's other perennials that I like. I don't use as much like Monarda.
Yes.
Well, they get big.
Got to give it space.
You got to give it space.
Yeah.
But one of my go-tos is, Little Spire Russian Sage.
That's a great plant as well.
You know, 18 to 24 inches. It does multiply a little bit. I just love the foliage, too. The silvery blue foliage.
Very ethereal. Yeah, it has great movement in the garden.
It does. It's very pretty. It's got a beautiful purple to it, but it's just a different color than the traditional what we're used to. I like it better than the full size.
Yep.
Because the full size gets leggy and flops a lot.
Yes, yeah.
You know, so I really like Russian Sage. That's one I can deal with.
Yeah.
On a regular basis, and I will install on some of my designs if people really want something, you know, a little unique, a little different.
Yeah.
So.
And I think there are a lot of great penstemons out there. I mentioned that Mission Bells Rose earlier, but there are some, that's an old prairie plant, and that's a great hummingbird and butterfly attractor.
Mm-hmm.
Tough, hardy, drought resistant, so lots to offer.
There's a lot to offer, so. And we're going to take another quick break right now, but we're going to continue our talk on sun perennials because there's a few different ones that I want to talk about as well. I know Darlene's got a few that she wants to add. So if there's anything you guys want to add, feel free to give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House on B105 with Tony Works. Tony is off today, and we've got our good friend Darlene Cooper filling in for us. And we have been talking sun perennials, and I want to continue that thought. You know, some of the ones I like are like the ground cover dianthus. I just like the ones that spread a little bit. What do you think?
I have mixed emotions about dianthus because that's another one of those plants that if you don't divide frequently, mm-hmm. you're going to get the old donut effect.
Yes,
where
big
you
hole
get
in the middle.
The big hole in the middle and nothing on the outside. Mm-hmm. So I think there are some nice newer varieties out there, and there are some nice older varieties as well. But I just think that when I am dealing, it all depends on the age of the customer I'm dealing with.
Sure.
Younger customers are not accustomed to division.
Right.
And they're very intimidated by it. And so if you tell them, well, you're going to have to cut this up every 3 to 5 years, they're like, no, I don't want that.
No, I want the one that's just sort of stay put.
Yeah, that just looks exactly the same and flowers.
And we all want that.
Yes.
It's just not that easy.
We do.
We really do want it all that easy. So, you know, I'm going to switch. I'm going to throw a curve at you here. And you were not expecting this, but shade perennials. Tony and I last week talked a lot about shade perennials, and you are such a wealth of knowledge. What are some of your favorite? I know we're switching gears, but what are some of your favorite shade perennials?
Well, there are a lot of really great ones out there. I think probably it will be a shared favorite is Brunera, Jack Frost.
Oh, my favorite. One of my favorites.
I think that's a really excellent plant. I think it has high adaptability to a little bit more sun than we give it credit for as well. Those robin's egg blue flowers that are just born in profusion above those silver leaves is just
gorgeous.
Fabulous.
It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. I really love variegated Solomon's seal.
Uh-huh. Have you had luck growing that?
Yes.
Okay.
I have.
I've struggled a little bit with that one.
Yeah. I think probably doesn't like to dry out as mm-hmm. much as we, you know, you think of it as a woodlands plant, but woodlands tend to be moister with a lot more organic material in the soil. So it can be a little bit tougher for them to adapt to our clay soil.
I think that's my main issue when I've planted it for some people is it's just not staying moist enough. And
yes.
I think that's really the big key because, you know, right next to it will be hostas and brunaria and coral bells, you know, and they do fine.
Yeah. You know. Once it gets established, it colonizes really nicely. But I mm-hmm. think it can be difficult to get mm-hmm. started for
sure. How do you feel about a bunch of the different heucheras? How do you like those?
I love hate relationship. I love some of the really exotic colors. I love citronelle. Mm-hmm. I like caramel.
Yes,
caramel has a very very interesting color wheel story to it. I love obsidian for mm-hmm. its richness. I think we probably both love plum pudding because it's a good performer.
It's a really pretty purple color.
Yep.
I love silver scrolls, the one that's got kind of the silvery centers.
A little
pewter. Yes,
yep.
with the purple on the outside and kind of framing it all in. I just like, and like we were talking about earlier in the show, when we were talking about hostas, and we love the foliages.
I mean,
I think some of the foliages actually, you tend to see more foliages than flowers anyway. So
when you're talking about shade gardening, you better like the leaves because mm-hmm. that's what you're going to be looking at most of the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I love a bunch of different ferns.
Oh, I do, too. I have autumn brilliance. And like I said, it's remained evergreen for me this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are a million great ones. Some of the Japanese painted, I think those are a little more difficult to grow.
They can be.
Tassel fern, Christmas fern, those are great plants that are easy.
Ostrich fern, that was pretty easy.
Cinnamon, mm-hmm. I mean, those are all really nice.
You ever tried the Christmas ferns?
I have not.
Okay.
I don't have enough shade in the garden where I've been doing ferns.
Okay, because I've put some of those in for some customers, and they're pretty good performer.
Yeah.
So, but what I found is ferns, I think ferns are better to be planted a little early in the spring or early in the season.
Yes, to get them
established. If you plant them real late in the fall, and I've made the mistake for some customers, and we warranty our stuff, so where I plant them too late in the season, get a little heaving, cold winter, you know, and you'll lose
that
a percentage
can be tough.
Of them. So I've found that it's better to go ahead and probably plant those more in the spring and summer.
Yes.
But what's great, if you have deer, you can plant ferns.
Yes.
You can plant as many ferns as you want.
Yep. Well, and we talked about the Lenten rose.
Oh.
Probably the most underused plant in America because there's been some great hybridizing going on with that plant. So now we're getting the flowers that face upward. Mm-hmm. We're getting the lighter colors that show really beautifully in that shade garden.
Look like they're weeping a little.
Yes, they're deer proof. They're evergreen. So they have a presence in the garden all year, and mine are just budded up, just getting ready to do their thing now.
And you can use those because they're not too big as a border.
Yes.
They work great underneath the ornamental trees that we had talked about. So if you have some other ornamentals and the tree gets wide and it's shade, they'll handle that really well. But they flower early.
Yes.
They give you that interest.
They do. And I've had, I have an old clump in the front of my house that honestly, it'll come into bloom around St. Patrick's Day and it might go till the 1st of June.
Really? That long?
Yeah.
Okay. But what I still love is the foliage. Like you said, it's evergreen, but the foliage is still really, really, really pretty on that.
Yes.
So I don't think you can go wrong with that. But the key is deer. And I think a lot of the shade perennials, we actually get some advantages.
Yes.
Because a lot of them are deer proof because they have to be.
Yeah.
And not to mention just the colors, but I still like a stilby.
I like a stilby too. I have a tough time with it because I'm neglectful.
Are you? So you don't water them, they dry out a little bit?
Yep.
So, all right. Well, we're going to take another quick break, but when we come back, we are going to switch subjects just a little bit, and we're going to look at a little bit of privacy shrubs or possibly privacy trees. If there's something when you look out your yard right now and maybe you're looking at a neighbor you don't like and you want some sort of change or a little barrier, we're going to talk about a few of those things. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House. Where has the time gone? Kind of crazy, but it is snowing outside. Roads are covered. I just got an update from one of my friends who's plowing up in Kenwood. He said the roads are covered but manageable, so if you're out and about, be careful. Give yourself some extra time as you're traveling. If you don't have to go out, just stay put. So, and enjoy a day in. So, but we did get a call from Nick. Nick, are you there?
I am.
Good morning, Nick. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Good. It says you have a question about some maiden grasses.
Yeah, I live up here in Monroe. Bought some maiden grass as a neighbor barrier you were talking about just a minute ago. And I bought about 15 of these in, I think, either a 3 or 5 gallon container. So they were pretty decently big right from the get-go.
Great.
When I bought some the year before, and what I had done was I took my hedge trimmers in the fall, and I cut them off close to even with the ground, maybe an inch or two left.
Okay.
The next year, I didn't have very good success with those. They looked very poor in consideration of the year before. So, when I bought these new set, I had asked the people at Burns, hey, what should I do here? And I'm not doubting them by any means, but I get a very conflicting amount of information from all different types of people, neighbors, other professionals. You know, some people say burn them. Some people say cut them. Some people say don't cut them. And that's actually what I was told to do, was to leave them until spring because the water would get down and then freeze and explode the tip of the grass root, which would then obviously hinder growth come springtime. So
You're going to, unfortunately, that is all the things that I've heard people talk about. I can tell you what I like to do and what I'll recommend for customers is I will leave them throughout the fall, let them get some winter color. But when it gets to about this time of year, I usually try to cut them, but I'll leave them 12 to 15 inches high. I'll leave a little height on them because it does give it that protection. So when the snow like this comes down, it actually kind of acts like a big blanket, little igloo, helps keep the ground temperature warmer. Have you ever mulched those things, or have you just put them in the ground and left them?
No, they have a 2-foot mulch circle around them.
Perfect. That's great. And then when you plant, did you plant them at ground level? Did you mount them a little? Were they a little low? How'd you plant them?
Maybe just a very slight mound.
Perfect. See, I like that. So what about you, Darlene? How do you feel about
that? Nick, about the only thing I would tell you is that grasses are very heat driven. And when we get a really cold, wet spring, you'll see the plant will be very slow to emerge. It'll grow way slower than it did the year before, because what you're describing is something I saw in the garden center where we couldn't even get grasses until much later in the year because it was cold everywhere we were buying them from.
Yeah, I think she's right. So like last spring, April was really cold, so your growing season got limited to a little bit shorter, so that could have something to do with it. I have had seen people burn them. I don't particularly like to do that. I think if you want to go ahead and cut them, leave them to about 12 inches. I think you'll be fine with it. That's typically what I do. I don't replace a lot of ornamental grass, maiden grasses. They're usually very hardy.
Yeah.
Do they happen to be a wet area at all? Because that's the only thing sometimes will hinder grasses.
So what I did was I actually put it around a telephone pole, which is close to my ditch line. So at certain points in time, that area can be very wet, and then all of a sudden it could be very dry. So it does have not the most ideal placement necessarily, but my goal was to make a nice perimeter around that pole so I wouldn't have the weed eater there anymore, because I actually have four telephone poles and among trees and everything else in the yard too. So I was just trying to limit it and kind of spruce things up a little bit.
It's very possible that, especially like a wet season like we've had now, that if the roots had some damage that you just didn't get the response in the spring that you were expecting. So that is very possible. But, you know, if you... I don't personally like to cut them all the way to the ground. I think that does give them, a chance to have some winter damage, and that's possibly what happened. Did they, late in the season, did they start to flush a little fuller at all?
They did, but they, like for instance, the pair that I bought this year, I probably bought maybe June, and in the time that I had them, they at least grew another half size of what they were when I planted them.
Okay.
The other ones, the ones from the year before, I would say that they had difficulties or struggled to make what they did the year before. So there was no additional growth. By the end of the year, things were kind of looking like last year, finally. But you know, like you said, it took all year to get us to that point.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been a little warmer this winter. This snow's not going to hurt anything. So have you cut them back at all yet, or have you just left them?
I've left them. I got full foliage, but that's the thing, too, is that, you know, now that they're really dried out, they're kind of flaking out all over the place. They're in the neighbor's yard. I'm going over there and cleaning them up, and I'm like,
whenever you get an opportunity, I'd probably go ahead and cut them.
Just go ahead,
But leave 12 inches at least.
Okay.
And then make sure they got a little bit of mulch around them, nothing too heavy. A couple inches will be fine. And then in the spring, you can go back to see Burns, a little light fertilization probably wouldn't hurt those at all. You know, I like Fertilum Start and Grow. I know Tony loves some of the Espoma products, but, you know, just something that's going to be a nice general fertilizer, I think, would definitely be beneficial to you. And at this point, as soon as the snow's done and they melt and it all melts off, I'd go ahead and trim it to about a foot. I think you'd be in good shape. And I'd love to hear how they do. So if you'll kind of keep us in the loop when spring and summer gets here and let me know how things are going, that would be great.
All right, perfect. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. You know, I love maidengrass. They're tough and they're hardy.
Yeah.
You know, they're great. So, but unfortunately, we're going to touch real quick. So what? We're almost out of time. What's your go-to with shade and blockage, or for privacy and blockage?
For privacy, my go-to is Green Giant Arborvitae all the way.
I can't argue.
3 foot of growth a year, and just very majestic plant.
Deer resistant.
Deer resistant.
You know, it's the only one of the few arborvitae that the deer won't eat.
Yes.
So I love that one. You know, another one, if you need something a little bit lower, maybe the 10 to 12 foot range, I love different viburnums.
Oh, me too.
You know, there's some really pretty viburnums. You got to realize you're probably on almost all varieties except for leatherleaf and Allegheny, you're going to kind of lose the evergreen.
Yep.
You know, you lose the leaves, but there are some really pretty ones. But unfortunately, we're out of time.
Doggone it.
Thanks for filling in.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad
great.
Your husband brought you, because I think the roads are a little worse than
I hope
you
he came
in.
Back.
I hope he did come back, too. So, but thank you to all the listeners out there. Tony and I will be back next week. So enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America, NMLS 407249, Equal Housing Lender, loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.